All right, welcome to episode, what are we, 230 of the Linux Slugcast. We're an open podcast / slug that meets at 9 p.m. Eastern every first and third Friday of the month using Mumble. We encourage anyone listening to come on and join us. Check out linuxslugcast.com for the server details. If you are unable to join us live during the show, you can check out, you can send us an email at feedback@linuxslugcast.com, and the rest of the stuff will be on the rest of the stuff. Check out the show notes or whatever for links to our Lemmy page, our PeerTube, YouTube, all sorts of other good things. Matrix channel. We'd spend a lot of time on the Matrix channel talking and BSing. Lemmy is where we post things. Lemmy is a free and open source. What is it? It's not.
It's a Reddit alternative. Replacement.
That's right. Yeah. It's a Reddit alternative. It's been our new place for posting things. Been kind of at a drift ever since. What was the Google one that left?
Google Plus.
Google Plus, yes. Ever since Google Plus left, we've been kind of adrift as to trying to find a home for our community, at least in the Fediverse. We've kind of reached out that way. We did MeWe for a while. We've done a couple of other things. But we've landed so far on Lemmy. We really like Lemmy.
That's great. We've got more followers on Lemmy than we've had anywhere else.
Yeah. So I'm your host for this evening, Honky Magoo, kind of muddling my way through that intro there. With us tonight is Eric.
Hello.
Joe.
Hello.
Lugbot.
Hello, losers.
Gotcha. Lugbot, come on now.
Minix.
Hello.
Morton C.
Good evening.
And Miner.
I think he's muted.
He is muted. Okay. He is there, though. Mm-hmm. If you don't believe us listening to the pre-show, he was on there a lot.
All right.
Oh, there he is.
Took me time to get my pointer over there to unmute. I sometimes listen to YouTube stuff, and I don't want to blow up the recording so that YouTube blows up in our face again.
Yep. You want to touch that at all, or?
I think if people want to know, then they can listen to the pre-show on this podcast.
Yeah, Minix got us demonetized.
We lost those thousands and thousands of YouTube bucks.
Honky didn't get any of that money this time around.
Nope. So we're reaching out to you to join our Patreon to support our servers.
Yeah.
Our non-existent Patreon.
That's right.
You had me for a second there. I kind of went, wait a minute.
You know, if I had to do this for money, I don't think I would enjoy it as much as I do. Like if this was a job or something.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Just like anything, you know.
Oh, we did get an email, though.
We did.
Yeah. Well, some guy wants to, he actually addressed it to you, and he wants to, I'll read it to you. He says, hi, Medics. What are your thoughts about getting a clip edit of one of your recent podcast episodes? Thinking your episode on Linux. They're all about fucking Linux. I want to edit your most catchy podcast highlights into viral clips to grow your podcast and advertising efforts and upload the clips to every social media platform you are on so you don't have to lift a finger. Would you be interested in a brief 15-minute discovery this Thursday? P.S. Love what you're doing with Linux Slugcast. To show my commitment, I want to propose you a first clip edit with no charge after the discovery.
There we go.
this wasn't written by a bot at all,
was it?
I don't know. I didn't respond. That'll be nice.
Yeah.
He tried to follow up, but, you know.
I'm sure this was totally a human sent email that didn't just insert.
I swear I'm not a bot.
Yeah.
Bobby Krieger?
Never heard of him.
I haven't heard of him.
Bobby Krieger, if you're a real human, write into the show and say human words that aren't from a script, and I will consider your offer. How about that?
But why? Why would you say that?
We're not paying you, ever. Because we don't make money.
No, I will give you $10,000 And if you reply back to us, then you have to make sure you write $10,000 in your letter. So I know it's you. I know what they do
on
Craigslist.
Don't do that. What if he is a real person?
He's not.
That, let's see if I can get that. I can't get that to look good. That is.
Well, if he is, he'll reply back. And I guess I'll have to give him $10,000. I'll just be screwed.
Let's see.
You don't think he's a real person, Hunky?
I think there's a possibility.
That's okay. I'll make his Gmail real quick, and you can ask later, why am I making the check out to Joe?
No.
I forwarded you the email so you can look at it.
All right, I'll check it out. I thought this was going to be a fan giving us words of encouragement.
No, none of that.
By the way, if you listen to this, give us an email. We like emails from real people that are not bots trying to scam us. Yeah, just tell us you like the show. Tell us you want us to keep going. Tell us anything you want. Tell us your biggest regret. Tell us your strangest drug trip.
Their biggest regret was watching our podcast, listening to our podcast.
Yeah, tell us your strangest drug trip.
Tell us you hate Morton C's audio.
Yeah. tell us what you think about Morton C's shirt tonight. Mm-hmm. Whatever. I just want people to participate. If you're not going to come on the show, at least reach out to us in other ways. We are very lonely and we crave human attention. So.
Well, people comment some of our Lemmy posts.
Yeah, but they don't even know that it's the podcast.
They
think it's
validation.
Just a Linux community. Like one person commented something. I said, "Well, you should listen." And they said, "Listen to what?" I said, well, this is a community for the part. Oh, is it? Okay. So anyway.
Oh well.
What were you saying, Joe?
You're seeking validation.
I am. I need validation. I need those likes. I need those upvotes. I need people to tell me I'm hot. I need all that stuff.
Well, one of those is never happening.
Yeah, you might be waiting on that one.
Danny, you're doing a good job, all right?
Thank you. Thank you very much. Am I hot, though? That's what I want to know. Hey,
you're doing a good job.
Which way would you
swipe?
We swipe?
Appreciate all your efforts.
Yeah. Well, which, by the way, Danny is hosting the back-end server for both the Lemmy and the Matrix. So,
I need money.
And they haven't crashed yet.
Yeah. What did you think about those pics I sent you, Joe?
Thumbs up for me.
All right, okay.
You sent me pics?
Yeah. You didn't see them?
Obviously not.
All right. Let's go. Let's do it. Let's do this thing.
Aren't we doing it already? Oh, no, wait, there's me.
There we go.
This is the show.
Yeah, basically. I know Netminer has a lot to talk about with in the realm of Raspberry Pis.
He certainly does.
He's muted again, but
he actually sent an email. I need to check that out.
I can talk about mine first.
Hold on.
Okay.
Or are we doing movies first?
We'll do the movie later.
Oh.
Well, between Morton C and Netminer, who wants to go first?
If you remember the Starbuck 14-inch laptop
from
Starbucks.
I think Morton the General should go first if he's available.
Who? Who'd you say? Morton C? Well, somebody say something. Say something.
Can you
God
hear me?
Damn it. Yeah, I can hear you.
The Star Labs. I purchased the Starbuck 14-inch Linux laptop.
Oh, you did. Nice.
It arrived a couple days ago. It arrived Tuesday. It is freaking awesome. I picked up the package from the front porch and thought somebody had stolen it in transit. It felt like it was just packing material in it.
That light.
It's so
that
light. Yes, it's a...
Are you using it now?
Yes, that's what I don't know why the video was so grainy. That's
it's dark in there.
Well, it's dark in there.
Yeah, that probably
is. Definitely. It is. There's one very bad light on a stand yeah. lighting the entire yeah. room.
Trust me, it looks
trust me,
better
it looks
than mine does
much better than mine does when it's dark.
Well, I'm so happy to hear that it's so as good as you hoped it
now would. They had two, right? They had the laptop and they had a tablet.
Laptop and they had a tablet.
Oh, they have two laptops. They have a tablet and then they have a mini PC. So the larger laptop is a 16-inch and it is not manufactured yet. They estimate 4 to 5 months before they start building them. So I'm going to give this laptop to Elle when I visit and switch her over from Windows to Linux. Hers is the main account on it, and then I added Mordency as a user, and I'm going to use it here and over there, and she can have it, and then hopefully when I get back, they'll be manufacturing the 16-inch laptops.
So let's hear this.
Oh, go ahead.
They have MX Linux. I chose MX Linux.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty slick. Using XFCE, not I think they have Fluxbox and KDE.
Yeah, options. They have a Plasma.
Yeah, they have a Plasma. Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, they have like 10, 15 different OSs you can that they'll install for it.
Yeah, I saw that. Yep. I was really surprised.
What'd you say, Netminer?
I'm hearing about half of this conversation, so what's going on?
Oh, you can't hear him. He got a new laptop from Star Labs. He's describing it, called the Starbuck.
I'm going to give it to Elle when I get to Thailand.
Well, I'm just saying that the audio is not coming across on Mumble.
What about you guys?
Oh, I'm hearing it just fine.
I hear it fine.
Hey, too.
I'm hearing it fine now. It was cutting in and out earlier.
Well, I'm going to try logging in again, so I'll be back in a moment.
Okay. Now, can you describe what you upgraded from? Because this is quite a big upgrade.
So I'm still using my ThinkPenguin from 7 or 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it is a 15-inch with a DVD burner and Blu-ray player. I think it's I maxed everything out on it when I bought it. I think it has 16 gigs of RAM, which was the maximum I could put in it. The maximum, I forget what the processor is. I think it's a Intel Core i7, 12 gigabytes of RAM, total of four cores, two each, so eight threads that run. 8 CPUs, 2 500 gig, I think spinning drives, and that was the maximum of everything that could be upgraded in it.
Now your new
laptop.
Oh, the new one. Didn't upgrade anything on it. I think it was $1,100. Let me. It came with. I don't know how big the hard drive is. It's got a
SSD though. Right?
SSD though, right?
NMVE.
Oh, okay.
I'll just click on the link in the show notes. 13th generation Intel processor. Says up to 64 gigabytes of memory. It has 32.
Wow.
It has a core boot, 5 years of upgrades for LVFS, whatever that is, a backlit keyboard.
So it comes with core boot?
It comes, well, you have the option of American Megatrends or a core boot.
Nice.
It's a Wi-Fi 6E, Bluetooth 5.3, has a USB-C Thunderbolt for charging, an HDMI port, USB 3, USB A, has a combo audio and input output jack. Says it has a DC port for charging. I guess it does.
There's like, a barrel jack for charger.
It didn't come with the barrel charger. I got it with the USB C charger.
Oh, okay, nice.
Oh, okay, nice.
Mm. Yeah, it was lightweight. It came with this powder blue velvet sleeve that it was in, and then had another one, a stationary one between the keyboard and the screen. And it's very light. It's the lightest laptop I've carried around.
What do you think about the display?
What do you think about the display?
The display is great. Tiny. 14 inches is tiny.
That's too small for you.
That's too small for you.
I don't know. I'll give it a couple months, because if it's not, they raised the price already on the 16-inch. It's gone up in price.
No other prices. No other prices
I've noticed.
Yeah, yeah, it they were. Like they're all I higher. Think they were. They're all higher. Mm. I think they were pre-order prices before.
I
was interested in the
Starlight, the tablet, and it was on sale for less than $500 to start, and now it's $600. But even that, they're saying it's discounted, because they're saying it was from 713 crossed out and has 598 after it. So their prices are about a couple hundred higher.
Yeah, I was afraid to mention that I'd ordered this and the tablet for a few.
Oh, you did get the.
Oh, you did get the.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. The tablet. Okay. The tablet's still. The laptop ships quicker than the tablet.
Okay. Okay.
So you get them both.
You get them both. Oh,
nice. I ordered them both separately. Yeah.
Yeah. So the tablet comes with what? What OS does that come with?
Same thing as the laptop. You have an option of like 15.
Yeah, whatever you want.
Yeah, whatever you want.
Did it come with the key, like a Bluetooth keyboard or something?
Keyboard or something?
No, I paid extra for the keyboard.
But you can get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to get it. That price, when it was under $500, I thought, wow, that's a steal for this. And then I figured out, once you put the keyboard, the charger, like once you put it all together, it was closer to like $650, $700.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, I kind of thought, especially since I've never heard of them.
The reviews are great for them that I was looking up. People have raved about them. This isn't the first set of stuff that they've done. And they're Linux from what I read and heard, they're Linux developers that are just fed up with not being able to get a laptop, tablet, mini PC that is everything they want and runs Linux. So they just said, we'll do it ourselves.
Check out this list. I'm sorry. I'm trying not to step on you. Anyway, I was just going to say, check out this list of Linux distros. So it's Kubuntu, Linux Mint, all three versions, Manjaro, GNOME, Plasma, XFCE, MX Linux, XFCE, KDE, Fluxbox, Ubuntu, Mate, Zubuntu, Zorin OS, and then you can get Windows if you want to.
I put the link to the show notes in the Mumble Chat, Eric. You can always add stuff to the show notes.
I did.
If you want.
I did. Okay. Yeah.
Well, you did?
Yeah, I put something at the bottom. It's under WireGuard.
On the show notes?
Yeah. Should I put it up higher? Or am I in the wrong week?
Am I in the wrong week?
It's 2:30.
You're
in the 2:30?
Wrong week. You're on
2:30. I'm in 2:29.
I'm in 2:30.
Yeah.
I will put it in the right one. Sorry about that. Right. Anyway, that's hugely impressive that they offer basically every major. I didn't read Fedora, did I? No, they don't have Fedora.
You can go with no operating system.
Oh no! I'm not saying I'd want it. I just felt like they covered. I mean, just about everything you could imagine.
Yeah, that was quite a bit. Think Penguin does the same thing. They have a huge list.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a beautiful device. I'm very curious to hear what you think of it when you get it, because it looks like it is probably the best Linux-focused tablet that I've seen.
I think so. Gotta be.
The reason they're not listing Fedora, I would suggest, is because of the Red Hat fiasco.
Oh, maybe.
It's because Fedora is very experimental. They're not pushing anything that doesn't have at least the idea of protection. Fedora is supposed to be like Debian testing or whatever. It's purely an experimental.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah.
You know, it's a.
Yep. Yep.
It's Red Hat's lab distro, and
yeah,
they just don't trust it for production use. It's not designed for production.
Gotcha. Well, you certainly have lots of other choices, so I don't think anyone's, and like Morton C said, I mean, you can just get no operating system, but yeah.
And a full-blown tablet that looks amazing and is 100% supported in Linux is what I've been looking for years.
So, yeah. I think everybody is.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I have.
You'll know when I start using it.
Yeah. I thought the everything about it was really. Maybe the processor was not like. I think for the application, it's going to be good. You know, because it's what you'd expect in terms of performance for that type of device, and you don't want it to get too warm and to be too hard on the battery and all the rest of it. So, I mean, I think it's probably the right balance. That was sort of the one criticism that I think that I could, you know, say about it. But in practice, though, it's probably the type of thing that they've got it tuned so well that it runs, you know, very smoothly. And that's on a tablet. That's really what I think, you know, for touchscreen, as long as it's smooth. Plus, I mean, the rest of it is all, you know, the memory, the storage, everything performs really well. So very cool. Well, I won't say I'm jealous, but it might be.
You ordered something recently.
What's that, Joe?
You ordered something recently, didn't you, Eric?
I did. Yeah. Yesterday, I've been doing the same thing, Morton C, where I was like, so seeing this device sort of sparked my interest again. So years ago, I looked for a decent tablet, and you could take a Surface Book or you could take something and adapt it, but it always seemed like it was a big compromise. And I just felt like paying that kind of money and then not being able to really use the hardware completely. And also just that they were really expensive. Like some of those, so the one that I ended up getting is a Dell Latitude 5290. And it's got really nice specs. It's an 8th gen processor, so it's about a 5-year-old device at this point. But it was $2,300 brand new, and I got it for $145 5 years later. So it's going to be fun to just try. Apparently, the touch fingerprint reader doesn't work, and it's up in the air whether the cameras work or not. But I thought for that price, I just want to play around with it and see how it works. It's got a backlit keyboard cover, which is another thing. I really wanted a backlit keyboard if I could get it. And yeah, 16 gigs of RAM, 8350U i5, 512 gig SSD. And yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to be like a killer, you know, workstation type system, but I think it's going to be enough. A 12.5-inch screen at 1080p, and supposedly the battery lasts pretty long, and also it's fairly trivial to open in the back and replace the battery and the SSD and stuff like that. So anyway, it'll be fun.
Yeah, the Latitude makes it really easy to pop the back off and change the battery and the SSD. Now, the RAM is soldered, but yeah, you can change out the Wi-Fi card too. And you might need to change out the Wi-Fi card, the Wi-Fi Bluetooth card, in order to have it working out of the box with Linux. And then you might want to anyway, just to get something like Wi-Fi 6 on there.
Well, in Bluetooth, it's Bluetooth 4 right now, so if I could get better Bluetooth, that would be nice as well. Lower power Bluetooth, you know.
And that's just a really cheap, easy fix upgrade.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and that's what it is. It's really just a test system. It comes with Windows 10 on it, and obviously I won't be keeping that, but it just, you know, it's amazing. There's just not a lot of information on running Linux on tablets in general. I mean, I think probably with
That's because it's gotten so much better than it was even 5 years ago.
Okay.
So much easier. You're not having to dance around to get the UEFI working, or you're not having to use a 32-bit bootloader and trying to force a 64-bit OS to run on it. So it's really plug and play now in most cases. So that's why you're seeing less written up about it.
Yeah. Well, I just figured if I had any problems, I'd just bug you.
It won't bother me. I enjoy that type of thing, so yeah.
Good. I now have it recorded.
Yeah, the surfaces I looked at looked slick, but a lot of them were underpowered and way too expensive for the specs.
Now, what about the framework? Did you look at that one?
That's a laptop, not a tablet, right?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, instead of the Skybook or Starbook, look at the framework.
Yeah. Doesn't that start at $1,000?
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. They actually just had refurb stuff come up, but, you know, that's the only thing that's under $1,000. Anyway, I think the idea of that is interesting. But I think Mortensen's right. Like, once you start piecing it all together, it's. You have to want it, I think.
I think the draw for the framework is its modularity, right? That's the big thing.
But how often do you actually change your layout on a laptop? Like, I think when you set it up, it's nice that you can pick.
Well, no, it's not changing the layout.
Do you want an easy way to change your Bluetooth?
What's that?
To upgrade your Bluetooth?
Yeah. What's the easy way?
But so framework, you can.
They have those modules that you just pop in and pop out to give it different functionality. I mean, HDMI, USB-C, you carry the extra modules just to pop them in and out. Plus, I believe you can upgrade the graphics or upgrade the processor until, you know, pinouts change. But it makes upgrading a whole lot easier. It would extend the life of your laptop. Plus, say you can't afford the best screen right now, you can get one later.
Yeah, I could see that being a danger, though, of like if you are into gadgets, like just being like, well, I think I'll just buy this piece and this piece and this piece. And before you know it, you've got like three laptops worth of connectors and everything else.
Would that bother me in the least?
Joe already has it.
Okay, let's find the various stacks of laptops that I have floating around.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, I want to be honest and say I've never understood the appeal of like collecting old laptops until I started looking at these tablets and realizing what a good deal that these ThinkPads are. Like, you know, if you for under a couple $100, you can get a really decent system that, you know, you could upgrade and do just about whatever you want to. It's a good chassis. Too. Yeah, good chassis.
I just moved a stack of four tablets over there, and then there's still 1, 2, 3, 4 more over here, and then Jackie has one upstairs, and then there's one in the living room that is my set-top box for that TV. So, yeah, I might have a problem.
Yeah. It's a good problem, though.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm sorry. I feel like I jumped in on Mortensen's segment there, and I know Netminder wants to have his say, too. So I'll just keep babbling if you let me.
Pie conversations.
Excuse me, Eric.
Yes, sir.
You're confusing us with an organized group.
Sorry, I won't let it happen again.
Seriously, you're exactly the kind of new blood that we need, as long as you don't bleed on the floor.
Mm-hmm. I will try my best. But, I'm a little clumsy, so I can't promise anything.
Well, I'm just saying, relax. I mean, if we were any more laid back, we'd be standing on our heads.
I like that. I might have to steal that. Oh, hey, my goodness.
Hey, oh, my goodness.
Not fed by liquid death.
Bad jokes are free. Worse jokes are cheaper.
Oh, you know what? I think probably my favorite reason for being a dad is that I don't feel bad about coming up with dad. I like to come up with my own that are just so cringy and have my daughter's eyes roll completely across.
Yeah, if elbows tasted like bacon, everybody would eat them.
Oh my goodness. Netminer, and I know in the spirit we're just mumbling, but if you wanted to go ahead and tell us what you got going on, I'd love to hear it.
Well, up front, I've been testing about every distro. I've been trying to get an XFCE 64-bit system up on a Raspberry Pi 8 gig, and the usual way you do this is get a server OS and go in, and using something called TaskCell, it downloads the desktop. Well, the new Raspberry Pi OS is a pure NoX wanted distro. So when you try that on their server OS, their desktopless system, it pulls in both X stuff and Wayland stuff, and you get an unusable system. So I went over to Ubuntu server and did the same thing. And when I got the thing booted, I found that the XFCE desktop, some of the settings were setting systems, like describing your screen and whatnot, were locked up. So either Canonical is locking people out of selecting their desktops on Pis, or they've been hacked and some crippled software has been slipped into the repositories. I've heard that Canonical has had some problems with maybe denial of service or something else. I haven't followed up on it. But when I tried that on both 2204 and 2310, I was not a happy camper. Now, I find PiOS's desktop to be, well, it's a little rigid. It's very rigid for my taste after being used to the adjustability of XFCE. And it seems to be simplified to an extreme level. I would say rather like an early Jeep. I mean, it's minimal controls, minimal comforts. It's just the facts, ma'am, you know, the old dragnet thing. However, saying that after sitting with it for a while and using the optimized Chromium, or I don't know whether it's Chrome or Chromium, and the optimized Firefox, it's pretty decent. Also, in general news, there's a new super optimized browser derived from Chrome or Chromium called Thorium. Thorium runs on just about everything. It's very cross-platform. And when you install it, you get two. You get the regular browser, but you also get something which is designed to generate web apps or things like YouTube become an application by itself without any, you know, it's sandboxed into itself. It just does YouTube. It doesn't, and it, you can, again, have something that plugs into, you know, your Google apps and whatnot, as as single purpose application, online applications. And it works pretty good on the Pi. It has some artifacting, but generally stuff I can live with. Some of the controls don't show up properly or aren't usable, like for a video speed and such. But as far as video playback, it at standard speeds, it's pretty good. And again, there's some other tricks that you're supposed to play, be able to play that can improve it.
I'm sorry, not mine. What version of a Pi is this?
This four. Is a Pi 4. It is the 8 gig, which I have the two of, but it's the top of the line.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
but it's the new Raspberry Pi OS that's causing the issue.
Yeah. Gotcha. Also, there's a the earlier Pi OS on that's aimed at Bullseye, you can put the desktop on. But because it's an earlier version of Debian, they call it a legacy operating system, and it really is getting a little long in the tooth. Also, you do not get the optimized browser. I mean, I may try Thorium on it to see how that works and see if I can get around it that way, because then I could get my... But then again, the XFCE is also an earlier generation. It's 4.16 instead of 4.18, which has some tweaks that I like. But anyway,
do you know if Diet Pi is 32 or 64 bit?
Yeah, I thought Diet Pi didn't want you to put a desktop on it.
No, they have desktops on there. XFCE's on there. I've used it in Fluxbox before, just to play around with.
Well, I made that's the one thing that I didn't try. Maybe I can do that. I don't know if they're updated to Bookworm yet.
They are. I'm looking at it right now. Bookworm.
Well, thank you.
Debian 12 Bookworm, it was released on June 10th.
And
they have an overview on how to install or upgrade it.
Well, that sounds great. Also, the way I will deal with the upgraded browser issue is by using Thorium and seeing if they have an optimized... if they have also been able to put the optimized browsers in their repos. That's the one system that I didn't try, because I've always thought of that as a
as a headless server. That's what I utilize it for. But on one system, I was playing around with the desktop also, and it does look like they have a x86 64 Bookworm.
Well, I will definitely try that. It would be nice. Basically, what I'm trying to recreate is something like MX Linux, which their flagship is XFCE, so I would be running the same interface on everything. And I might even try to steal some of the XFCE, some of the...
They have a Pi respin of MX Linux.
I tried looking for that, but I haven't been able to find the link anymore. Their new website is fancy, but their Pi stuff has disappeared when I tried to look for it.
It's 32-bit Debian 10. The link I have is Debian 10, so that's...
Well, I think I'm going to go with the Diet Pi plus my usual upgrade. Thank you very much. That will save my tail. But on other stuff, with a properly optimized browser, I've been able to get fairly decent YouTube playback in. It's been usually 480p resolution according to YouTube, but also I've been loading my Pi up. There's one trick that I've heard is using something called ZRAM or ZSwap, which turns your swapping to your USB stick or your SD card, you're swapping to a area of memory and the data is pre-compressed by your processor. So it's supposed to be a RAM boost type system. I haven't tried it, but I've been looking into it. Also, I have heard that on the Pi 5, they've changed the pin for band control or what have you, but Raspi Config offers you a choice of pins for the Pi control, so you may be able to use Raspi Config to switch your fan pin to the one that works on the 5. I'm not sure. But I've been digging around on this stuff for a while. I also want to look at Chrome OS so that I can use their Kindle. I can see if I can load their Kindle, Amazon's Kindle reader application and pull some of the books that I've paid for off there in case I have to close my Amazon account or reset it or something. Anyway,
how long have you been using the Pi as a desktop system? I'm just curious. Like so you're talking about Raspbian, and like I can vaguely remember the desktop, but to be honest, I've never spent any real amount of time on a Pi as a desktop system. I just set it up as a headless server usually. So.
Well,
I'm just curious what your experience has been. Yeah.
I have tried Pi OS in prior years or Raspbian, and at one time I even you put the Pi shell on another OS. They actually have it for x86, but I found it to be a very limited experience and again very rigid, although I also found Ubuntu's Mate to be rather rigid, at least in the Pi versions that I've tried, and GNOME I find to be just too heavy for a Pi, at least for a Pi 4. It may run okay on a Pi 5, but...
Have to do anything special with cooling? If you're using it as a desktop, I'm assuming you're pushing it pretty hard.
Well, that's the interesting thing. Raspi Config allows you to adjust the cooling. The one thing that you have to remember, I would look around for if you're using, is that you have to manually select the performance tab and then go in and chase it in Raspberry Config. Say you want to activate thermally controlled fan and activate, and then you set what pin you're using and what temperature in Celsius. So, and your choices are between 60 degrees Celsius, which is pretty hot, and 120 degrees Celsius for your fan.
That's 120 is too hot, right?
Yeah, that's above the well above the temperature of boiling water. So you'd be able to fry an egg on your CPU by that time. But another thing with the Pi 5 is the cooling solution coming out of the Pi Foundation is not passive. The cooling solution on the Pi 5 is a heatsink fan combination. Also, the Pi 5 comes prepared to have a clock battery like any other PC.
Mm.
It has a serial port, and they have a connector for one channel PCI Express version 2. This is a connector that's designed for a high-speed I.O. hat of some kind, which is not yet designed. Also, the Pi 5 goes back to the left-handed, if you look at the USB ports, the arrangement is back to the original Pi's Ethernet on the left as you face the plugs, and USB on the right, with USB 3 in the center and USB 2 on the right-hand side as you face the jacks. Also, there is a nominal, the way you can tell how much memory your Pi 5 has is that they have a series of solder pads going from, I believe, 1 gigabyte to 8 gigabytes at the moment. I say at the moment because there seems to be space for a 16 gigabyte selection. So, again, like a Pi 4, they have made logical room for doubling the memory once again to 16 gigs in a later rev, although only the 4 and the 8 revs are actually being released. The lower memory units are not available, and the notional 16 gig unit is for an upgrade. Also, your Pi 4s that are 4 gig, there are two revs on those. One is the initial production, which runs at 1.5 gigahertz stock and uses an earlier power control circuitry and chip. This one is not as robust as the later model Pi 4s, Pi 400s, and the 8 gig Pis, which run a revised CPU and a revised power control system. They are trusted to run at 1.8 gigahertz stock, and I have heard them overclocked with appropriate cooling up to 2.2 or higher. But the reason you see Pis for sale dated 2019 is to tell you that Pi 4 is a first generation 1.5 gigahertz machine with the earlier power circuitry and is not factory, does not have the improved Broadcom chip revision for the faster clock and improved power usage. The Pis that are being available seem to be those that were warehoused when the 8 gig Pi and the Pi 400 and the Pi 4 of that rev was initially sold. So these are first generation Pis that have been stored somewhere and are coming out of somebody's warehouse. They don't seem to be the late model with a more desirable, faster clock speed. Now I found that I can live with the Pi OS Wayland, and it seems fairly okay. I'm getting a few artifacts here and there, especially with the Thorium browser, but nothing too bad. There is a Debian community server, a Debian Bookworm community server out there, but when I tried to put the XFC desktop on it, there was a lot of screen interference or tearing, and the applications were pretty squirrely. I hope the Diet Pi system is more stable. Oh, the nice thing about the Pi system is that you don't burn your installer and then load it. You burn the core system, and as part of its startup, it settles itself down. Now, in Ubuntu Mate, their pre-installed system has basically the keyboard and localization plus user questions of an installer in its first run system. I don't know how the GNOME system works, not having tried it, but again, when I tried to put the XFCE desktop on GNOME server, both 2204 and 2310, I got the same crippled single screen desktop with a settings, the normal display detection and setting system was locked to one resolution and one screen and wouldn't allow you to change anything. So somebody, whether it's Canonical or party or parties unknown, has slipped in some crippled software regarding the XFC desktop on the Pi. Anyway, that's my experiences so far. I haven't tried Diet Pi plus a desktop, but I may explore that to see if they have see if it's just the Debian that I tried, or whether it's been given some massaging to deal with the screen issues. Well, I hope this stuff is useful to you guys. And again, I hope you try the Thorium browser. It's a very optimized version of Chrome for about everything. It's a universal browser for Linux, Mac OS, Windows, of course, but it's very cross-platform. And again, can dip it, because it's Chromium based, it can dip into a vast array of plugins, and it can, again, they have an element which which could make standalone single target interfaces for different services, whether it's Google or YouTube or what have you. These are cut down versions of the browser, but they are seem to be quite effective when I tried, or when I generated one by accident. But that's the name of that tune. Is anyone still up?
Still here. They're still here. They're
still here.
Honky sleeping.
Not this time.
You both were sleeping for a little while.
No, I wasn't.
Earlier. Yeah. You and Honky both had your eyes closed for like 20 minutes.
That doesn't mean we were sleeping.
Before Netminer started talking, though.
I was doing some house cleaning.
One of the things that I found working with the Pis is you have to come in at a different sort of angle. Instead of a BIOS settings, you use Raspberry Config for most Pi OSs. And even Ubuntu, you can download it, and it mostly works for localization, for setting up some of the interfaces, SSH, VNC resolution, and some of the purely control interfaces used by Pi programming for programming basically industrial or experimental devices. I2C or whatever they happen to be. So you have to dig through their menus. Also, an interesting feature of the Pi OS and Pi formatter, Pi imager, is it has, I forget the magic key, but when it shows the gear icon on the front page, if you click that, it will pre-configure your Raspberry OS compliant deployment with your username, password, wireless details, country and time zone, and whether you want SSH enabled. On Pi OS itself, this is part of their preferences menu, and it's just for a lot of it, it's a prettier version of the standalone Raspberry Pi config. The Pi user and the Raspberry password are actually not only references to the Raspberry Pi, but they're in lowercase English letters. These open simple choices are able to be typed in on any keyboard that has the equivalent lowercase English characters on them, regardless of whether your keyboard is French, German, or what have you. As long as you've got those basic letters, you can log in and then tune stuff. I thought that was a clever touch. Any questions?
So what's your plan for the Pi 4? What are you going to use it for? Mainly, is it just a desktop or what?
Well, I have a Pi as a desktop. Actually, under the table here where I have several minis as desktops, and I have a new small form factor, which is basically a mini in a small form factor case, as a more flexible and hopefully cool running server. But since I may have to shut down that server, I'm thinking that I'm going to have something like Casa OS on top of Diet Pie or something here. Under this table, I have a, it's a shelf unit originally designed to hold things like shampoo and whatnot in your, not in the tub area, but in your bathroom, maybe deodorant, what have you. And I have that hanging up under here. So I can tuck away the Pi server, a maxed out Pi 4 with drives and video adaption and everything is a pretty, produces a cable jungle. Well, I can keep that stuff out of sight and have my SSDs or hard drives on USB to SATA converters tucked away on the shelves of that unit out of sight here and tapped into my network. And because of the generosity of Lovecraft, I have a ...1080p screen with two HDMI inputs. Also, I have a USB 2 AB switch. So, if I rig things right, I can switch to the Pi channel. I know it's going to be a server much of the time, but if I decide to put a desktop on it, I can switch my keyboard and mouse and my displays to channel B, and I will have basically a poor man's KVM for this system. I mean, eventually I may look into a real KVM, but I can cobble one together out of what's already here. And again, I must thank Lovecraft for donating me this this very fine basic 1080p screen, which I can use for utility purposes like this. I can switch the display from my main desktop to my to the under the table Pi, and just to check on its health up front. And of course, with the Pi being so very low powered, I can tuck it away basically anywhere that I have a network connection once I have something like Casa OS on it for remote access. Although I may also see about putting a Mesh Central client on it. The Mesh Central is a server monitoring system that also supports remote desktop type access from a central master unit to a number of different machines, both Linux and Windows and perhaps others. So I may be able to do remote desktop anywhere on my internal network, which will be very convenient.
That was Wayland.
That was what?
Not with Wayland.
Yes, but I don't know if the new desktop on the on Diet Pi is a Wayland desktop. And yeah, and as far as that goes, again, I'm using Wayland on a USB stick at the moment that has that I swap in and out from that to, well, I've had Mate on an SSD, an old SATA 2 SSD out of a machine that I am junking. SSD boot, even under USB converters, is much preferred over the flash solutions for responsiveness, boot time, and whatnot. Never mind storage. I've had very good luck with. Part of the Pi Raspberry config can set the boot order for your Pi, whether it comes up with a C command line interface or a desktop, and whether it is SD card first or whether it's USB first. Once you have enabled USB boot, your flash drive is a second choice, just like the old CD-ROM. And there's also a network boot option, which I haven't really explored. An interesting feature about the Pi 4 is if it sees absolutely no bootable media, it will trigger an onboard version or try to download a version of Pi Imager for OS installation. So it has a built-in net installer. I don't know. I presume that it is a dedicated imager with the able to download listed operating systems. But I've never let the process complete. But it is a it's an interesting self-healing or self-bootstrapping mechanism. Having a machine that if it doesn't see a bootable operating system, it gets itself ready to net boot an imager thing for configured for downloading your choice of operating systems. Quite a little trick. Also, utilities within Raspberry Pi Imager are accessible through it for creating the electrically erasable EEPROM, which is the equivalent of a Raspberry Pi's BIOS chip or BIOS support chip between Raspberry Config and the chip that determines the environment we're used to as a BIOS system configuration environment. Other net boot options I haven't really explored, but I heard that they exist. I prefer local storage, and I haven't really wanted to do a net install over it through a naked Pi. I mean, a Pi with just storage attached and nothing pre-burnt.
What about you, Joe? What have you been working on?
Oh,
3D printing?
Much. Well, of course, 3D print. No. Yes, I actually have been 3D printing some stuff. Let me see if I can bring that up. Yeah, it's this one. Okay. I had, where is it? Give me a second. I will grab it.
Not prepared.
Absolutely not. You're just out of nowhere. Hey, Joe, what you been working on?
Like we because on this show we never talk about what we've been working on.
Right, but you know, give me a little bit of time.
Surprise.
Yeah.
So here's one thing I've been working on: modifying this set of headphones. This is the Audio Technica ATH M50X. They're studio quality headphones, so they're very flat, not a lot of bass. They're useful for studio stuff, but they're not really useful for like casual listening. Voice stuff, they're great. I mean, if I'm listening to an audiobook or something, kind of nice. But
what did you do to modify them?
So far, and this is early days still, I 3D printed this piece right here, and I do need to get new cups there. Yeah, the cushions, they're a little worn. But just gave it some more space, makes it a little bit more comfortable so that the speaker grill isn't sitting on your ears. The extra space actually does a little bit, add a little bit of bass quality. And I've also ported it. I gave it a little tiny port right there. So that way, instead of getting the closed back action, it gets some airflow and gets a little bit more movement, which will also give it better bass and more sound quality. Well, yeah. And these have also had the hinge fix done to them, because the hinges on these things break so easy, which is why I got so many pairs of them for like next to nothing, because people don't want to take the time to fix. So yeah, it's just a really, really simple fix that prevents the hinge from bending too far outward. It's also a good preventative if you have one of these and you don't want it to break, and it's a very common break. Just 3D print this little piece, snap it on there, and it prevents it from bending outward too far, but still gives it the full range of motion inward so that you can close it up and carry it. Now, with the headpiece adapter on it, it doesn't fold up as well as it used to, but like I said, it's worth it for the comfort and the sound quality. And then I also have an adapter on here to convert it from the extended 2.5 millimeter that it has to a standard 3.5 millimeter. And I'm either going to make a 3.5 millimeter right angle extended bracket to hook a straight line Bluetooth module up to it, so that way it's sitting in front of your face like a microphone. And also, you know, this has a built-in microphone, so then I can use it for calls and also for music and things like that. And then it's just got the 3.5 millimeter right there, which is why I need to build my own adapter that is, you know, kind of stiff like most of your headset mics would be. And then this on the end of it, and voila, Bluetooth headset with a microphone, and awesome. Either that, or I want to drill two more holes on the inside, or take it completely apart, drill two holes, and put two bolts through it, so that way I can mount one of my other ones that I've already made before to this, and then just have cables going to the inside and have the Bluetooth just on the back of the ear cup right there, which is a bit more difficult and not really interchangeable the way I would want it to be. So I'm probably going to do the less invasive one first. And then I've been talking about setting up the, what is this, the 4020, I think, yeah, 4020 fans on my Ender 3D printer. And I've got it started. I just got to do the last little bit over there, which requires me to, you know, turn off my 3D printer long enough to do it. But it's all set up and ready to go. And then the next time my fans go out, I can just solder up a new one and disconnect the one, connect the other, and it's ready.
What is that for?
This is for my Ender 3 3D printer.
Oh, okay.
And this is just little power pigtails that I had sitting around. It would probably be better to do it with lighter and smaller, like, what are they, JRT connectors? And they're just little plastic, and they snap together. But I had these. Yeah. They were here. I might as well use them. I've got like 20 more of them, so I've already done one. I should shorten the cables on it, though, because I was just testing at the time. And then this one is all set up, and all I'm going to do is cut the cables on the stock one and replace it with this, and it's ready to go.
Neat.
Yeah.
Hey, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Do you get all these headphones because it's just something you enjoy doing, or do you actually, like, sell them, or, like, what is your motivation?
I was selling them for a while, and okay. I did sell a lot of them, but I also collect a little bit when it comes to certain types of headphones, so, and also testing out things that I like. Plus, I love working on headphones. I love taking headphones that people have said are completely broken, these will never work, and then making them work. And then, like, I have these ACHM50Xs. They're actually fairly costly. I think they're like $200 new or something like that. And I get them cheap because the hinges break, but nobody wants to buy them with that that simple little fix on there. And so it's
not worth it. So you'll
find them
for like a fraction of what they're worth.
I'll buy them in, I used to be able to buy them in bulk. Prices have gone up on broken stuff. People are fixing things now. I guess I had just that much impact on the community talking about it all the time that everybody's buying them all up. But no, I made actually, with headphones, that was one thing. I did make pretty good money. I made enough money to keep up with my habit. And if you saw how many headphones I actually have floating around, you'd probably be a little bit disturbed. But no, I was able to keep up with that habit. It paid for itself. But I also did the same thing with PSPs. And I actually made pretty good money buying, fixing, modding the software on the PSPs so that you could play any game and then turning around and selling them. But, you know, I was able to get, for a while there, the PSP 1000s, 2000s, and 3000s for, you know, anywhere from $20 to $40. But you try looking for an even broken one now for those prices, and yeah, it's not going to happen very often. And, you know, I was buying like four or five at a time. And then even if I only got three of them working, then I was turning around and selling them for $140. So
yeah.
7x profit, I'll do that all day.
That's awesome. So in fixing all this stuff, then you probably also have just about all you need to, you know, work on small electronics and, no?
There's always more stuff that I want. Like, I have a soldering station that I don't use as much because I started using my micro pencil, which is back here, the Pinesil, right?
Oh, okay.
But I have sets of screwdrivers galore and spudgers to take things apart, and
A hot air station.
That's what I need. That's what I was getting to. I need a hot air station to do things properly. And I keep my soldering picks handy. So these are incredibly useful, either for taking things apart, cleaning up prints, just anything you could imagine. They're extremely useful. And then, you know, I got my, the stands that I've made that's holding all my different sets of jeweler's tools, mini pliers, things like that for small electronics work. And then I've got the Amazon Basics set of tweezers. Those are actually pretty decent as long as you don't get too heavy-handed with them, because they will bend somewhat easily. Every type of snips, side cutters, channel locks, Yeah, I've got them. So I am pretty well set up, and you know, I have a magnifying glass that's attached.
I was going to ask you, what do you do?
In front of me.
Yep.
A lighted magnifying glass in front of me, and then I have another light right next to me, and then it's very similar to my one that has the magnifying glass, but it doesn't have the magnifying glass in it. But it does have a 17 millimeter ball joint on the second arm, which can be used for either a phone mount, which is currently on it, or the helping hands that I have over there on the other one.
The things that like grab and hold.
Yeah. Let me see if I can pop this off on this one, and I'll show it to you. I'll have to actually.
I think I've seen them.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Oh no, it comes right off. It's just lots of screwing.
Yeah. Okay.
So I'll be able to pop that on there.
And I'm assuming that makes life easy.
Yeah. But Danny is right. I mean, a hot air soldering station would definitely up my game. When it comes to like removing chips and even removing power ports, you can do it with a soldering iron and you can put it back on with a soldering iron, but it's a pain in the ass to do it without a hot air station.
Yeah. One of the YouTube channels I watch, one of those old tech channels that I can't think of which one right now, but he does that where he does the soldering hot air and removes the old solder and the chip comes off so clean. You know, and there's no scorching, and like, yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Are they pricey or?
Good ones are, and I'd prefer to have a decent one. And yeah, I could go to Micro Center and probably get one at a fairly decent price. I did go to Micro Center, and then I bought the wrong one. I bought a hot air gun instead of a hot air rework station, which has a lot more control, and you can do some with that hot air gun. It's just, it's missing a lot of the fine control that you need for a lot of smaller electronics. So
gotcha.
I will pick one up one of these days.
Well, cool. Yeah. I just never knew, cause I know you talk about picking up a lot of different gear and then fixing a lot of gear, not only headphones, but just stuff for, like, I know Moss and Dale have talked about, you know, you doing stuff for them. And so it just seemed like you were doing kind of across the board, just lots of small electronic kind of stuff.
Absolutely. And then, you know, a lot of the stuff I don't sell or I won't sell, but I will give away as Christmas presents to family. And,
oh, nice.
You know, if I'm paying $5, $10 for a Bluetooth headset that's a fairly decent quality that just needs a simple cable fix, and then I'm giving them what amounts to a $70 or $80 Christmas present that I paid $5 for and spent 45 minutes fixing.
Yeah. Well, it's that 45 minutes fixing that is the thing that most people don't know how to do. I know. I of course, to you because you do it. Like it seems trivial, but for me, like
first started if doing I wanna... it, I didn't know how to do it. Now
yeah,
I do.
Yeah, right.
Go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. That's exactly what I was going to say. Is like, so if I thought, okay, you know what, I'm tired of. Maybe I have a favorite pair of headphones, or maybe I have a favorite thing that, like a USB port that comes undone on a board, or like just some basic thing. Like I don't even have a soldering iron right now. I've had one in the past, and I just sort of haven't used it in such a long time that I don't have that one I had, and it wasn't a good one to begin with. And so anyway, like just to get to the point where I could actually fix something, I feel like would take a lot of time. So that expertise of being able, like you said, you'd buy a PSP and then turn it over for a huge return. Those people were still getting a deal at $120. So, you know,
Yeah. And they enjoyed it. I mean, you know, it was perfectly working and it would play every single game that they wanted, and it was worth it to them and it was worth it to me. So
yeah. Virtuous, you know, it's a virtuous,
and it's better than the stuff going to a landfill.
Yep. 100%.
Like my most recent fix for any electronic device that, you know, isn't a pair of headphones. I have a USB 3 Wi-Fi adapter that does like high-speed Wi-Fi. I got it specifically because it would do Wi-Fi 6 a while back, and I use it on just for extended reach on a lot of my devices when I need to. And the USB 3 port, just a couple of the pins on the inside had come desoldered after so much use, and so you'd plug it in and it just wouldn't be seen by any device, and then go in there and 15 minutes worth of work and it's working like new again.
Yeah, and guaranteed that's something that most people would not even think, oh, I can fix this. Yeah, exactly.
Throw it away, buy another one.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, I could get on a whole tangent about people don't fix anything for themselves anymore. And it's to some degree, as with right to repair and all this stuff, like that's the way companies want it to be, right? I mean, they don't want people that are going to not turn around and just keep buying more and more things.
Yeah, I don't under. I really dislike that you can't take phones apart. Take the back off of a phone and replace a battery anymore. And a battery is like the first freaking thing to go and the easiest thing you can upgrade.
There's nothing else that says planned obsolescence like a device with a sealed rechargeable battery.
And it's not
simple as that.
And yet the whole, you know, the back sealed is one thing, but then they put a glass back on there. So that if
you're gonna
try to take it apart, it's just going to freaking shatter.
Yep.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, you know, it's funny you mention that, because that's the thing I had in the show note to talk about was I had a Pixel 5a that I got in May of 2021, new from Google, and it just turned off and never turned back on. And what's my recourse? I've got three buttons on the outside. That's it, right? No reset buttons, no nothing. So if that power button isn't triggering the device to come on, what am I supposed to do with it?
And you know? The most likely things are, well, it's probably not the power switch if you plug it in and nothing happens as well.
Nothing
so that
happens.
Means it's like a 10-cent capacitor on the inside.
That's my guess, yeah. I'm assuming it's something that's probably not easy to fix, but like, I've never had a smartphone that just literally, like, wouldn't even come to where it would try to boot or come on. Or if you plug in power, like, nothing works whatsoever with it. So, very strange situation. But that's exactly that type of situation. So, my only recourse would be sending it somewhere or taking it to a shop, maybe, and having them try to take it apart. But I feel like some of these things, like once you take them apart, the likelihood of you ever getting them back together exactly how it's supposed to be without any extra space and any of that, like, you know, that glue being pressed together the way it is when it's put together, like, it's not, none of it's made to ever be touched, you know, it's...
Yeah, I'm not going to take apart and put back together a phone that someone is needing for a daily driver, you know, to get around with.
Yeah.
Now, if it's an old, like, backup phone, I'm using it for an IP cam or, you know, it's just sitting around, I might try and take it apart and put it back together. But my assumption is going to be that I'm not going to get it back together when it comes to a phone.
Well, this one I'm not going to sell it for parts or anything like that. So I am going to take it apart, and whether that means breaking it to do that, I basically just want to see if I can ever get it to come on again. Just because there's some stuff on there I'd like to get off if I can. So
that's where either a heat gun or a very powerful hair dryer comes in handy, because a lot of that is glue.
Yeah, I was thinking that maybe I'd run to Harbor Freight and just get the cheapo heat gun. Just to have something. I've had some occasion over the last few years, every 6 months or so, something will come up where it's like, oh, it'd be nice if I had a heat gun, make life easy. Anyway, so I might do that. But yeah, I figure if I take it apart and I can, I don't know, maybe disconnecting the battery, maybe something can get it to at least, you know, show some signs of life. And if not, I don't know if there's any way to actually get at the storage that's on there. And it, the stuff that's on there isn't like the end of the world that I'm not going to get it back. But it would be nice because there's some pictures and some files and things like that. But I mean, I will say that the auto backup that Android has is pretty comprehensive now. You know, between messages and, you know, contacts and, you know, all that stuff, it's pretty good at it. So when I got the new phone, you know, and I logged in and restored, 95% of what I had on the old phone was there.
Well, I've been thinking about it for a while now, and you know, internal storage, the volume of internal storage was always, you know, something I looked at and was important to me. But or the ability to have a micro SD card and expand it to something that I would consider to be usable. But I'm thinking about it now, and with my server set up at home, more often than not, I don't need it on my device. I'm going to be streaming it from the multiple terabytes that I have on my home computer. That's not to say that I won't occasionally move something to my phone if I'm having connection issues or something, and then use it from there. But then that's just going to be, you know, what, maybe a couple of gigabytes, maybe 20 gigabytes at most.
Right. Yeah. You know, for me, the biggest thing now is that apps are so, they're such space hogs. Like, and I get that you use the space you have and that developers aren't necessarily motivated to keep
Optimize.
So, you know, when you look and you see an app's taking up 2 gigs or 3 gigs or four, I mean, however much space, and you know, some of that might be stuff that you could clear out a download that it did or something, but just the app itself, when it's that big and you think, okay, well, even if you have 64 or 128 gigs or, you know, even pushing higher, if you have enough apps, that's the majority of the space on your device. Like I had an old iPad that had 32 gigs of space, and I had to make like real tough choices about, and there was nothing on it at all. There was no media or files or anything. It was just apps. And yeah, it was like a challenge to.
Yeah, that used to be a major issue when you only had like, you know, an 8 gig, 16 gig device and the apps just took
over.
Well,
we thought the. Yeah, exactly. Well, we thought, okay, well, you know, 64, that's, we'll never use that much, right? But then the apps just keep getting bigger and bigger. So.
Right. It's like, I'm going to buy a 12 terabyte hard drive and it's never going to get filled up. No, no. You get that 12 terabyte hard drive, you're going to find things to put on it.
Yep. It's like that goldfish principle, right? Like the bigger the space. So,
to the removing the back of the phones, there's a special heat pads they have to do that with. And the person that fixes my phones for me replaces the battery and resolders the USB connector and stuff like that. He uses one to take the backs off. Posted it in the notes.
That's probably better than a dryer or a heat gun. Well, that's definitely better than a dryer or a heater.
Well,
or a heat
I know
gun.
A heat well, gun. You'd have to be careful because, like, it would, you'd have the potential for getting it too hot.
Yeah, yeah. These you set it to the temperature of the epoxy inside, and it just pulls right off. It's great.
That's smart.
I've seen them do it. It's amazing.
So I got as a replacement. So that's the good side of a phone breaking is that it gives you an excuse to get a different one, right? I had considered not getting a another Pixel because I had just gotten burned by the 5A dying. Although it had been over 2 years, so I mean, I don't know what I expect, like a device that's solid state that lasts forever. And so I like to get 3-4 years out of a phone now. They don't change enough for me to care about a new camera, about a, you know, new, unless it's not being supported with security updates or if there's something really amazing in a new version of Android. Like I really don't care that much. Or if the battery's not holding a charge, maybe.
I still got my Note 10 Plus. There's a little bit of screen burn. I could get that fixed if I wanted to with the insurance that I have on my phone. but it just received, or it's just going to be receiving its final like operating system update, and then that I think it gets maybe security updates for a while, and that's
yeah.
But I've had it since like day one, brand, you know, when it first came on the market.
What year was that?
4 years ago, five.
Oh, wow.
Four or 5 years ago now, and it still works great. My wife's got the exact same model phone. She had worse screen burn than me. She did get her screen replaced, and they're still working great. I do not see the point of upgrade. Now, I like the latest and greatest just for the sake of having the latest and greatest? Yes, I would. But the prices right now do not justify me running out to get the Note 23 or the 23 Ultra. So, you know. And Jackie, you know, wants like the Fold 4 or 5, you know, the I think they're up to 5, but I think she'd be happy with a 4. But the problem is they're $1,600, and they're not as good as the Ultra line, which is the same freaking price.
Well, and they also sort of, it's an unwritten or unspoken truth that those Folds, you're only going to get maybe, what, a good year, maybe two, before you start getting the creasing and all that, or no?
So far, but I suppose if you have decent insurance and you're paying for that, you can get that screen replaced when it wears out.
I guess.
Or if they they won't replace it because it's worn out, it could accidentally fall and then the screen could shatter, and then insurance will cover fixing it.
Right. What's the IP rating on that thing?
I have no idea.
Nah, I'm just kidding. So I didn't think I'd get a Pixel, and then I looked at, my wife has a Galaxy S21, and I gave my old OnePlus 5T to my daughter, which is still a good phone. The screen's not, the color's weird on that screen, it always has been, but the size of it, the build of it, the battery still holds a charge. I mean, that thing's 6 years old, I'd say, maybe more than that. So it hasn't been getting updates or anything. Anyway, so I considered all those brands, and you know what, at the end of the day, I really like, there's a couple things that the Pixel does that nothing, you know, you can't get equivalent features. So the call screening stuff, all the sort of like on device stuff it does on the Tensor chips, the call screening, the voice recognition, the stuff for photography where you could like Magic Eraser, that's what it is. And so there's just, you get a lot of stuff out of a Pixel, in my opinion. And I really, I liked the 5A. I thought it was a pretty decent phone. And so anyway, I got a Pixel 7, a used one. So I usually buy my stuff on Swappa, if you've heard of that. Just because I like the process that, like, it's a nice marketplace, and I feel like I've never been burned. Like, everything I've ever gotten there was in really good shape and priced fairly. And, anyway, so I've had the Pixel for about a week, maybe a little bit longer, and it's better than the 5A in every single way. It's got a slightly larger, better screen. It's 90 hertz instead of 60. It has the Tensor 2 chip, so all that stuff that's on device is even better than it was on the 5A. The voice recognition with Google Assistant on device, voice dictation is the best I've ever used. And it's, what's really cool is it, it's reticent. It's not new. It was on the Pixel 6 as well, but, it stays, active where you can actually go and you can correct something in the text and, put the cursor somewhere else or whatever. And it's still there where you just start talking again. It also does auto punctuation and does it actually like very accurately, which is kind of amazing. And so it's just very natural to just speak and have it capture everything. The recorder that's on there, if anybody's ever used that or not, but it does voice recognition and captions if it's a conversation. it'll actually split the captions apart and say, you know, person one, person two, and it's all very accurate. And it's doing all of this stuff like on the device itself. So anyway, I wasn't sure if I'd like the new Pixel, new to me Pixel, and it's a killer so far.
I am actually interested in the Pixel 8, but only because I've heard so much about the fact and do VMs.
Mm-hmm.
So I am interested in trying out a VM on the Pixel 8 or seeing someone try out a VM on the Pixel 8 and seeing how well it works.
Gotcha. Well, so I'm cheap in the 7. You know, that was a $900 phone last year or so. And I got it for $330 or something like that. A guy that, you know, I love finding these guys that get a new phone every year. You know, they want the new Pixel, and it's like, yep, you're the guy, you know, especially the ones that keep it in a case and have a screen protector and, you know, don't abuse it in some way. So that was this guy. Got a couple of cases. I got the original box and the charger, and like it was well taken care of. Came with the screen protector on it. And so for that price, you know, it's kind of hard to beat for me at least.
Well, I think the Pixel 8 is $1,000 and like the 8 Pro is like $1,600 or something.
Yeah. If I still traveled like I did and I worked out of the house, like I traveled literally all week long, like all 5 days of the work week, sometimes on Sunday as well, getting there. And then I always had, I didn't care how much I spent on it because it was worth it.
Well, I had this conversation once with my dad, and he used to be a mechanic. And that will come into play in just a second. But he asked me, you know, I don't understand. Why do you buy such expensive phones? It's like, well, Dad, I use my phone for work. When you were a mechanic, did you buy cheap toolboxes?
Yeah.
No, you spent like $2,000 or more.
Easily.
On those giant toolboxes from, what's that company?
Snap-on.
Snap-on, right. So he did. He got the really nice toolboxes from Snap-on that kept all his stuff organized. He's like, no, I bought the expensive ones. And it's like,
does he paint,
the same for me.
Does he put a little dot of paint on all of his tools so he knows which ones are his?
I don't think he did. But, well, the shop he was working at the time, there was him, and then there was his boss, the owner of the place. So okay. there wasn't a whole lot of need to keep his tools his.
Unless his boss has sticky fingers, so
yeah.
My dad was a mechanic, and it's the same way. Like, he had thousands of dollars worth of tools, and right, he didn't skimp on it because he used it and he needed to get a job done, and it was worth the money to him. So yeah, it's a good way to explain it to him. Did he buy that answer then?
he understood completely after that, and he's never bothered me about how much I spend on cell phones again. So
gotcha.
I mean, but yeah, and would I love to get the S23 Ultra? Yeah, but am I going to pay those premium prices for them? Not the way the economy is right now.
You know what? I heard somebody mention a device, TCL 20 Pro. I've never heard of TCL as a brand.
For TVs, and I've heard of them.
But apparently they have a smartphone, and it's a eBay only kind of thing, I guess.
And
a guy I know was talking about getting one on a podcast that he's on, and
is that like buying a Blue?
Well, it says that it's $500, $499 for the 20 Pro 5G. This is PC Mag. They claim that it has a sophisticated design, bright, sharp AMOLED display, headphone jack. Oh, it's got a courage jack. Solid performance, crisp color, accurate photos. Cons are no IP rating, the limited carrier support at launch, and lacks C-band support. So, but it looks like a pretty decent device. I don't know. I guess he doesn't. He doesn't like Pixels, and he doesn't like Samsung, and so I guess this is a alternative if you don't like OnePlus or...
Oh,
who else
dude,
sells
yeah.
phones now? I mean, well, is there...
The Nothing phone is supposed to be awesome.
Oh, that's right.
But those are people that split off from OnePlus, if I remember right. But yeah, definitely like my second or third choice would be the OnePlus line. I mean, it's kind of a toss-up there between OnePlus and Google. But Samsung's going to be my first choice most of the time. And then, like, back in the day, I used to love HTC, but they kind of went nowhere, so...
That's what I was asking. Like, who's actually even selling phones anymore?
Huawei's still selling phones. Xiaomi is still selling phones.
But in the U.S.?
I think Huawei's still selling phones. I'm not sure if they are or not.
Okay.
But Xiaomi is still selling phones, I think, in the U.S., but they had a lot of bad press there for a while, so... And then, gosh, Blue, but they sell really low-end phones, not good phones. I can't really think of anybody else.
I don't know. You know, I guess you'd have to trust that the company was going to support the product well, you know, that it was well-built in the first place. And when I think of... this is the same thing, though, with Star Labs, you know, it's a small company, and I think to myself, like, how are they manufacturing this stuff? Like, you know, it's not cheap to get the tooling done and all of that that you need to, you know, build the physical products themselves. And they've got four different laptops and a tablet, and so that was a moment of hesitation whenever I thought, well, am I really going to dump money on this? And, you know, are they going to stand behind the product? And I understand that Star Labs specifically looks like a really legit company with a track record, but there's been other stuff where it's kind of like...
When are they going to be around this time next year if you need parts?
I don't know. You know, and it's definitely true that Dell or Lenovo or, you know, any of these other places where you could get equivalent... I mean, I've been so impressed by Framework because I thought for sure... that was going to be a nearly impossible task for them to launch, to put out all that hardware, to keep the SKUs in stock, you know what I mean?
They're definitely not the first company to try and put out a modular laptop, and like everybody else just like crashed and burned with it. I mean,
think of the amount of money it took to build the inventory, to the manufacturing,
Well, they had Linus throwing money at them.
Yeah, well, somebody's thrown quite a lot of money at them. That's for sure. So, but I am definitely impressed that they've managed to pull it off. And apparently, the products are really good. I mean, I hear people like, I'm not saying it's like the be all end all, but I have respect for Louis Rossman. And for him to say he loves his because he drops it and beats on it and it works really well. And I thought he brought up something really interesting about the ports, where normally ports are soldered on to the motherboard. And so if you bust that port, then you've got a problem with the motherboard. But he said the way that the frameworks are, because of those modular ports, you're not putting that stress on the motherboard.
And if those break, then they're easily replaceable.
Right. So from that perspective, I could see it being a more sort of robust machine in the long term. And then if something did happen, you could just replace the modular part of it. I don't know. I guess the point I brought up earlier, whenever I say, like, who is changing their layout that often? Like, I guess if you're traveling and you have different needs for different situations, like, that's one situation. But I've seen people who are like, well, you know, you could just swap the put a number pad in, or a, you know, or a different.
All of those people, I promise you, they might have all the different parts, but they find the setup that they use and then they leave it that way for the rest of time.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So anyway, it still looks, and it's something that's interesting to me. I do think, for a couple of reasons. One, like I said, I have some positive feelings around the company themselves, and like the fact that they've been able to do it, and I like that, and I think that would be interesting to have one of their products. And then just the products themselves, and then first party support for Linux, and like there's so many good things. Nate now has one from Nate and Leo, so just two guys that I know from podcasts and stuff, and they both really enjoy them, and have talked about like the utility of the parts, like maybe even using a motherboard in like another chassis, you know, not using it as part of the,
Well, I know was it you that I talked about it with? There was that video on YouTube with that guy that took one of the framework motherboards and a couple of the modules and built his own CyberDeck out of it.
Wasn't me, but I could see that happening. Nate actually, so he built his daughter, he 3D printed her a little, it looks like a like an old IBM clone or something. The one, like the kind with the screen built in. So it's kind of got that shape, and then he built it with a Pi in it, but he's found that that's been limiting for her to do schoolwork and some different things, and so he wants to retrofit it with a framework board, so that it'll be a much more capable system, and also the cooling solutions built in, like all of the major tricky parts.
Also mention that to him that he can also probably do that with like a Latte Panda or something like that.
Gotcha. Well, he seems to be kind of he kind of seems to be all in on the framework stuff right now. So I think because he has one of the laptops, he's already got extra components and stuff. So I think he kind of wants to stay in the ecosystem.
It's understandable. And I think my barrier right now is, you know, I'm broke, so.
Hey, I can relate to that.
Yeah. So I'm going to go out to the framework website, framework laptop.
I'm sitting here looking at the Nothing phone. I was peripherally aware of this, but I really had never looked at it. The LED bands, like the LED lighting that's built in, is pretty, it's gimmicky, but it's also really cool.
All right, I'm just looking at the main boards now. Well, that's not terrible. I7 11th gen, $300 for the main board. It's a great place to start.
Yeah, that's not bad.
And plus I5 11th gen, $200.
And it includes all the stuff you'd need with, like, around the cooling solution and, it's a lot of components that come with the board. So it's a pretty good value. I think it's interesting because then you could use the modular components as well to some degree. So you could see so he 3D printed that case, and I know to get the power supply in there, he had to rework the back panel a bunch of times and reprint it several times over. He did it with a type of material that he wasn't happy with at the end, so he ended up reprinting it with a better, like a PLA or something. He actually took it to Linux Fest Southwest, I think, and they had a lot of fun with it. Just like they just had it set up at the conference because he had his daughter with him at the conference too, so she'd sit there and use it, and it's bright pink.
actually I'm on their website right now, and they have this refurbished framework laptop 13, so I assume that's a 13 inch DIY edition with the 11th gen i5. $600.
Yeah,
that's a pretty damn good price for a laptop, even a refurb.
Right, if 11th gen, heck yeah. And you know that so the components that are in there, let's say you get less because it's not brand new and it's not...
OS
you know,
and expansion cards are not included, so you have to buy your own.
Oh, well, no, I don't think that's a huge expense, is it?
I don't know here. Parts, expansion cards. Actually, yeah, a little bit. Okay, I see. Here, no, the HDMI is $19. An Ethernet card is $39. DisplayPort, $19. USB-C, $9, A, $9, micro SD, $19. You can get the cheaper first gen, or you can get like a refurbished expansion card pack with two USB-C, one USB-A, and one HDMI for $30. That's just probably what I would go for, just so I didn't have to, you know, pick and choose all the rest of them. But they also have like a 1 terabyte expansion card, which is that same size. It's kind of tiny, but that's $125.
Okay.
Oh, and a 3.5 millimeter jack that you can get, that's $20.
Well, so does the, I'm looking now too, does the ones for $719 or $749, I guess they're probably the same thing where you'd need to buy the expansion stuff. I don't know, but, let me see.
Well, yeah, no, the one I was talking about was $599. It's very much towards the bottom.
No, I see that, but I didn't know if maybe you paid an extra $100, you'd get like all that stuff without needing to.
No,
yeah,
evidently
like, so
the U.S. version doesn't have it, but if you buy the French version, for EU only, France, Germany, the Netherlands, Austria, Ireland, each laptop is prepackaged with an EU power adapter, 4 expansion cards, pre-installed Wi-Fi, and a framework screwdriver. So, if I come up here. And each laptop is the U.S. ones are prepackaged with a framework screwdriver only. Memory storage, Wi-Fi, power adapter, OS, and expansion cards are not included. So no RAM either. No RAM, no hard drive, no Wi-Fi card. Now, I got Wi-Fi cards. I got Wi-Fi cards. I can find one and put it in there. But yeah, once you start also sourcing RAM, yeah,
I see. And that, so the Starlink, this reminds me of the Starlink tablet, where it was like, it's $489 or something, and then you throw in the type cover, which was I think either $100 or even more than $100, and then the power adapter, and then it was. It looked like a great deal, and then all of a sudden it was close to $700, and you're just like, wow, okay.
Well, the $600 one, if I can find RAM, then yeah, that's great. I mean, NVMe, I can get that easy enough.
I need to get a bigger NVMe for my Dell XPS. It's 256, but I use it as my system drive, so I dual boot. So I'm splitting. Basically, I have 128 per install.
Do you have a micro center near you? I think I bought a 1 terabyte one for like $30.
No, I don't think I have a micro center anywhere near me. I don't have any good computer shops in Southwest Florida, believe it or not. Let me see what the closest one is.
Okay, so yeah, I'm looking at this configurable framework laptop 13. Base cost for the 13th gen i5 is $849, which I guess isn't terrible for a 13th gen. So I would need at least 16 gig of RAM, so that's plus $60. I can bring my own NVMe. $40 for 250. Yeah, I'll bring my own on that. Customization, bezel. Yeah, I don't care about the color of the bezel. U.S. English keyboard. Power adapter. Okay, so U.S. power adapter. I have to pick one of those. That adds $50. Now, if these are powered by USB-C, then I don't give a shit. I'll bring my own.
I'm pretty sure it is, yeah.
None, bring your own, okay. Okay, and then if you want the adapters, then you should probably get like 4. I want at least 1 USB-C, 1 USB-A, 1 HDMI, and I want audio? No. I can deal without that. expansion, storage expansion cards? No, I'm good. So $946 for a 13-inch laptop with an i5 13th gen.
Whoa, that's actually a way better price than I thought it was.
That's a pretty damn good deal.
Hell yeah, it is. Plus the so I think obviously the game changer for me would be I've always preferred Dells because I find them just easier to maintain over time, and I have now four running generations of Dell laptops that I've purchased consecutively. So the oldest one my daughter has that she uses for school. The next oldest one I have is just a test system. The next to that is my wife's main system. So I had upgraded mine and gave her, and this was like close to 5 years ago, and gave her my Inspiron gaming 17-inch system. And that thing, it's got to be close to 8 years old, and it's still, she uses it every single day for work. So, and she does graphic design and stuff. So it's not like majorly intensive, but still, you know, she's got Chrome with 50 tabs open, and, you know, it's got 16 gigs of RAM. I can't even guess what processor's in it or what generation. I don't even remember. But the moralist, and then I have an XPS 15. And then for me, the reason that I've had such good luck is because they're just very easy to maintain. Like something happens, the keyboard went in this XPS, and even though it was a pain in the ass to tear it all apart, because you literally had to take every damn thing out of the case to get to the keyboard, you know, it was easy to disassemble because it's not a bunch of shitty plastic clips. And so I was able to take it apart, put it all back together. Parts were cheap because they sell enough of them. And so anyway, my point being that the game changer with the framework would be, even though Dells are that easy to maintain for me, at least, I feel like the framework would just be sort of, unless something happened or there was some major change to the chassis, like you really just don't have a reason to ever, it's like the desktop system I have. I haven't completely started from scratch with like a new case and new everything in over a decade. Like I just keep changing out pieces in this system. Like, and I did recently get a new motherboard and processor and, you know, RAM and all that. But like I used the same video card again, you know, and the same storage. And if I had a laptop that was like that, I can imagine just having that thing for, you know, basically just for perpetuity until there was some reason not to. That'd be pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, no, I agree with you on the Dells. I'm a big fan of the Dells, and I think I would like a framework laptop if I can, you know, scratch the money together. But I've done on my like XPS 13, I've done full motherboard replacements. I've replaced the screen. Nothing is difficult on there. The only thing I dislike about the 13 line is the fact that the RAM is soldered to the board.
Yeah.
All right.
Time to cut it.
Well, yeah. Why don't we do the? We want to do a quick and dirty review of the movie, or do you just want to save it and we'll do it next time? Because it's late.
Yeah. Let's just save it.
You want to just save it? They'll give. Look at that, Joe. I'll give you a chance to watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because Joe hasn't seen it yet, and it's already midnight. Yeah. You haven't seen it. You know where to get it from the Matrix room.
I don't even know what it is.
I looked in the Matrix. Is it pinned?
Yeah, it's up there when the where all the links are to the, I don't know. To
okay,
the,
okay, I see it.
Yeah, Devourer you'll see it.
Devourer from 2005.
Yeah.
Devourer.
Are you
part, okay.
Are you in our Matrix room, Eric?
Yes, I am.
Okay, yeah, just get it from the, it'll be up at the top with all the pinned links.
Yeah, okay. Click it to read the topic, and then it's the one at the bottom.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Sounds good.
All right.
I will tell you this. It's not a tech movie.
What? He's a He's a computer gamer. Repair guy.
Well, yeah, that's true.
That's how he meets the girl.
Yeah. Okay. Whatever you say.
And the game, in the game he's supposed to be playing. Well, it was he did sign up for it on the computer. I'm not sure if that necessarily counts or calls it a computer game. But he is a computer repair guy,
mm-hmm.
who fixes a girl's computer. Who apparently some wax got into it while she was doing a tarot card reading.
Uh-huh. Oh,
you know what? That makes sense. I forgot about that part when you consider the rest of the movie. You know, I didn't even think about that. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
So you guys watch it, and then we'll talk about it in November.
In November.
Yeah, November. Holy cow!
You guys got plans for Halloween?
Or is there? It's not a full moon. No, it's not.
I stay here and give out candy, and my wife and daughter go out and trick-or-treat. So, and each tomorrow, year, successively, it gets less and less. There's fewer and fewer people. So it's a real bummer, because I like having trick.
We were having that problem where less and less houses, but this year, like, the amount of money that people have spent on decorations, like, there's somebody with a 13-foot-tall, like, Stranger Things-themed series of statues in their yard that I just cannot believe. And, you know, their neighbor has even more crap up, and it's like, wow, you guys have a lot of extra money just to throw it at one holiday.
Yeah. Well, some people really get into that. It's just like Christmas decorations, you know. Some people just go way over the top. And
all right, we're preventing Honky from.
Sorry.
Yeah, you're just going on and on and on.
They're still talking, those bastards.
All right.
You can still talk after we end the show. It's fine.
I kind of need to get off here.
Our next reporting date will be November 5th, November 3rd, sorry. Can't read it so far. November 3rd, 2023. Our music is Downright, provided by Cloud 2 and Brome. I'd like to thank Dylan for the use of his Mumble server. Maybe next time we'll be able to use Danny's Mumble server.
We will. I'll get it worked out.
He doesn't screw it up again.
Finally, yeah. We'd like to give a special thanks to Father Finch, Weeb, Dave Morris, and Tony Bemis for their help and support over the years. I've been your host for this evening, Honky Magoo. With us tonight has been Eric.
Goodbye.
Joe.
Good night.
Lugbot?
Good night, you sacks of crap.
It took something there.
Good night, everybody.
Morton C.
Good night.
And Netminer.
Good night, friends. And best wishes, Ms. Shorts, wherever you are.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Night.
Now I get to sleep.
Still there.
Gonna be there when there's no fan.
Now it's not there. Now I'm gonna record Bitsy, and hopefully this is not gonna do a weird mode. Make sure. Alright. Test, test. 1, 2, test, 3, 4, test, test. Ha, ha, ha! Okay. I can turn that off. All right. Yeah, I don't know what's going on with the Mumble server. Well, I do know what happened. It's me. All roads lead back to me.
Yep. Beginning of the show, we got to talk about why the video got taken down.
Do we want to do that and risk getting taken down again?
Well, I mean, we can say why.
Doesn't I mean don't know to... why, to be honest.
Well, it's a very convoluted reason why. I think it's all right if we have a discussion about why, isn't it? Or should we just leave that to the beginning so we don't risk the possibility of being taken down again by discussing why we were taken down?
I don't
want
to do that.
Were we cussing that... or something?
No.
No.
Were we talking about drugs?
Kind of.
We were talking about drugs for a little while.
But right. I mean,
but we were talking about
See, the thing is, I never want to feel like we have to censor ourselves for anybody. That's why we have a PeerTube channel. That's why we have a podcast that's, you know, it's not governed by anybody. And what, and we didn't do anything on last stream that was... Well, what I hate is that it makes it look like we're some kind of fucking conspiracy terrorists and we were talking, saying a bunch of Alex Jones shit and stuff like that, which wasn't even close to being the case.
Yeah, but that's YouTube. They shoot first and ask questions later.
And you're right, because, I mean, I tried to appeal it, and, I mean, nobody, I'm sure a human being did not even look at it once. They just said, nope. And not only did they say no, it deleted the video from our actual private library too, which is crazy.
Well, like, that...
usually they just don't let you make it public, but they just deleted it from our private YouTube library.
Well, YouTube is squirrely about medical matters. If you're not, you don't have a long string of stuff at the end of your name.
And, you know, I watch some videos that are just about health in general, you know, and just, you know, how to take care of yourself. Nothing conspirational or whatever, but they when they mention what we were talking about, they always say that which cannot be named. You know, like they can't even mention it without getting...
They were talking about...
You're going to have to type it out and tell me what it is, bro. Either that or stop the recording long enough to tell me.
Yeah, it's what I had. You remember what I was? What I had while I was down and out?
Oh, the big C.
Yeah, the big C. Yeah, that's another thing they call it, the big C. And well,
we were
or
taken
the C
down.
Word.
We were taken down because we were they it stated that we were bad mouthing the vaccine for the big C, and we did bad mouth the drug that is offered to try to help fight the
actually we could talk about it because I never published the pre-show on the YouTube.
Oh, all right. Thank God. Yeah, Plavix or whatever the hell fuck it's called. It's
Paxlovid,
whatever. We talked about that, and I think that us talking bad about that is what got us taken down. But in the note, it said that we were taken down because we were bad-mouthing the vaccine.
Yeah, spreading disinformation about a proven medical, you know, thing or whatever that's backed by lots of science and shit. And it's like, we didn't say anything bad about it, you know? There's nothing there. I think it's just algorithms. Also, because I had COVID maybe in the... I put COVID talk in the description, at the end of the description. Maybe that flagged it for something. I don't know, but... It could be that talking about Paxlovid, could be talking about the vaccine. They never told me what it was. But I know, it's not like we were saying that, you know, it's all a cover up by the Jews and to, it wasn't anything like that. It wasn't any stupid shit, you know. It was just a regular conversation, you know, based on our knowledge of you know, yeah, going through it and stuff like that.
I mean,
you can talk about it if you want to, because, this isn't going on YouTube.
So many YouTubers have the bowderized version of their stuff on YouTube and use Substack or something else for the unwatered down stuff.
To say what's really on their mind.
Yeah. Kevin Beth or something. I forget his name. He's both a software engineer and a former military guy, and he does a lot of military analysis. He also is pretty good at detecting disinformation from those other folks, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing. It's like,
you know, in the land of borscht and the land of chopsticks.
I just don't want people to think that, you know, we're that type of podcast that's gonna, you know, that talks bullshit or whatever. It's just not. It's not our style. For one thing, we're a Linux podcast.
Yeah, well, the thing about it is that anyone who's been on listening to YouTube longer than a week hears all of the stuff that they that everybody dances around because of the YouTube gods not liking certain phrases or certain like they talk about corn. Is that other stuff that you're not supposed to talk about?
Mm-hmm. You can talk about it. Yeah, I mean, you can say it.
I'm saying.
Oh, I see what you're saying. They substitute words.
They have to make up code words that will get by the algorithm.
Right, right.
Also, they were trying. One person put up a short trying to help people who were. Thinking of doing something rash to themselves.
Yes, that gets taken down a lot. And I see people all the time, like, they can't say suicide. They have to say removing yourself or, you know, can't even be mentioned.
Well, the thing about it is that means people who are... That's like saying, wait a minute, you can't grab that guy by the shirt because you might tear his shirt, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, you might save his ass.
And, you know, a lot of these people are depending on YouTube for income, too, so they really got to step lightly with what they say. And I'm not even talking about, like, I'm just talking about normal conversations, you know? You can't even have a normal conversation about stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, so many of them have, I mean, they don't have, the successful YouTubers are putting roots down in all other sort of online countries. They're not relying. It used to be that a YouTuber was a YouTuber was a YouTuber was a YouTuber. Now they're not. I mean, they're hedging their bets, so it looks like Fort Knox.
Like, can you even still make money on YouTube? I don't even know if you can.
Well, the thing that
the top 1% can.
Yeah.
Also, a lot of people are passing the hat in different ways, and some people are doing YouTuber has their super whatever joining the channel,
they like super chats and stuff.
Yeah, they have Patreon, they have cash.
Don't they always say, like, you can become a something where you pay monthly or something to the channel?
Yeah, channel member.
Member, okay.
But of course, YouTube, there's a tremendous amount of skim going on any time that you're having YouTube help you raise your funds, or at least considering how many people are on YouTube, it doesn't take much.
You have to be really in like the top 5-10% to make any kind of money on YouTube.
Yeah, the only thing that now, if you're talking YouTube direct, a lot lot of folks are using other payment agents. Damn it.
You mean like Patreon and stuff?
Patreon. There were two or three others.
Advertisements of their own during the show.
Are you going to get sponsors and stuff?
Yeah. Also, but they're not relying on YouTube as a as their source of income. They're using these other. They're going straight to the channel members. They're not using YouTube's mechanisms, whether it's YouTube ads or the YouTube memberships or what have you. So they don't rely on YouTube as an income.
And YouTube has gotten extremely invasive when it comes to advertisements.
Yes, and they're also talking about
blocking people with ad blockers?
Yes. And I don't know how vicious they're going to get with that. Because it's Google, they could even screw up your email.
Yeah.
One thing that I noticed with some stuff is that there's a huge chunk of channels where, let's say they have clothing try-ons or whatever, bikini try-ons or whatnot, and they all meet YouTube's modesty guidelines. But these are just that's just the window for more serious, shall we say, material. So for a few dollars more, you can see what you actually came here for.
Okay, so...
So the righteous YouTube is actually advertising corn.
When you update Mumble Server, which is Murmur, it overwrites your INI file, which is your configuration file. And so you have to fill all that info in again, which isn't a big deal. It's just sucks.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that when we get to the show, I have a lot of information on the Pi, some stuff that's happening either with Canonical support, or there could be a penetration of Canonical, because I've heard...
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you now.
Okay, can you hear the fan?
No.
Okay.
There's some stuff which I ran into, which is either Canonical shutting some stuff down, or somebody has messed with some key files in the Canonical repo for the Pi.
So out of curiosity, what is somebody who is the top tier for YouTube?
PewDiePie.
What the hell is that?
Oh man. Hard to see, is that you?
Mr. Beast.
What's Mr. Beast?
You don't know what Mr. Beast is?
He's the guy that gives away all the money. Right? Gives away some stuff. You have kids and you don't know this stuff.
And there's so much controversy around him. That there is a lot of controversy around that man. Like he helped a whole bunch of people get hearing aids or a specific surgery to help them heal or hear. And people complained that, you know, he was only helping out one type of deafness.
He was helping out somebody, right? So what the fuck do they care?
Oh, and then they want to say, well, he's just helping out people because it makes him money. It's like, okay.
He's still helping out people, isn't he?
He's still helping out people. I mean, he's giving away houses. He's giving away cars. He does crazy things like give people money for the number of curls that they can do with a really light weight. And
so what is he, besides giving shit away, what is his channel?
Giving shit away.
That's it? So does he have a shit ton of money just giving shit away?
He also did like a Squid Game remake where he was actually doing a Squid Game but not killing people, obviously.
I never saw a Squid Game.
Neither did I. I still understand the premise.
What was the premise? Don't die.
Basically, there's a bunch of poor people that in order to get out of debt, they join this game show where you either win or you die. But if you win, you get money and you're no longer in debt.
There you go.
But if you lose, you die.
Aren't there other games that you can try that that'll do the exact same thing? Of course, you just let harder to get on.
It was just, you know,
play the lottery.
It was a Korean TV show. It was like huge on Netflix.
Yeah,
Squid Games. Yeah. Did you watch Squid Games? No. Okay.
I never watched it.
I watched it.
Martin, but see, your audio is
hot.
Something.
But it was just, you know, describing how in debt people are and the things that they have to do to get out of it. Being willing to die to no longer be in debt.
So because he gives away a bunch of stuff, people follow the channel. Because they want to be one of the people to get free shit?
No, people follow the channel because he gives away stuff in interesting ways. But the controversy is the fact that he's giving away stuff in order to make money. But if he wasn't making money, then he wouldn't have the money to be able to give away stuff.
I think it should be who cares?
Yeah, the guy gives away a lot of money.
It's not to me. I don't care. I'm not going to be one of those people that get it. I'm not begging for it. I don't care who gives it to. He's giving shit away. Good for him.
I'm not subscribed to his channel either. It's just I catch a lot of the news that talks about the controversy around him.
What news talks about a YouTuber giving shit away and people being angry that they're giving shit away?
Oh, gosh. What's Philly D?
What's Philly D?
You should check out Philly D on YouTube. Him I do watch for my
daily
news.
I don't watch YouTube.
You should check him out on YouTube for your daily news.
If his daily news is talking about people pissing and moaning about another YouTuber, that doesn't sound like
something
I want to watch.
No, he's talking about what's going on what is interesting people on the internet right now. He also talks about Ukraine, and he also talks about, you know, the Middle East and anything that is major news right now. And he makes it into a format that is not salacious.
You don't ever watch YouTube?
It's a Philip DeFranco show.
Never?
Not really.
Not even for, like, how to fix stuff and things like that?
I'll do that sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you say you don't use it as a form of entertainment?
No.
Okay. Another channel that is interesting is it's called the Whatever Channel. This conservative guy and sometimes a conservative woman from another channel lines up these young women who are party animals, and some of them are OnlyFans types or...
Yeah, there's a lot of his short running around the internet where he's roasting women, essentially.
Well, the women think they're all that, and it's like...
He explains men's perspective to them.
And the women, being proper feminists, say, wait a minute, what the men want is... doesn't count. Of course, these women are also so full of themselves that when they get on his show, it's like filling a room full of balloons and then letting loose a bunch of porcupines.
I really wish I would have saved that. Alright, I'm foul.
Fish in the barrel, you might actually miss the fish.
That's the funny thing about fish in a barrel. It's not the bullet that kills them, it's the concussion. Oh, wait, that's only if you use a 50 cal. That's right.
Yeah, well, I actually prefer the hedgehog, but...
Let's save this somewhere. Oh, wow. I'm just have to rewrite it.
Can I have a moment of silence for the folks of the USS Ward, the ship that fired the first shot in the U.S.'s war against the Japanese?
Was that today?
Not exactly, but they were out in patrol, precautionary patrol before Pearl Harbor, and they found a midget sub on the surface, a bit like today's drug subs, and they fired a shot from their 40-millimeter AA gun, and it went right through the conning tower and sunk the tunnel gun. By the way, also, if you want to see some true hackery, look up on YouTube the Eager Beavers. These guys were totally crazy. And they got some shit done that drove their higher headquarters nuts. They were a bunch of misfits that got together, and they were doing the most nasty missions in their area of the Pacific with B-17s, and they were doing stuff their own way.
Morency. That's awful. Not just me, is it?
No, I had to put him on local mute for a minute. That was harsh.
I mean, these guys were so crazy that they went, when the brass took away their B-17, they went out to the boneyard and through alternate supply channels built a B-17 that was armed to the teeth and where normal B-17 has one waste gun, they had two on each in the waste gun position. They had one gunner, and they even cut a hole in the floor so the gunner could fire down at aircraft coming up from the bottom. They had 350s, one locked straight forward like a fighter, two on flex mounts on either side, where a normal B-17 would have 30 calibers. And they did some crazy stuff. Like, they had a very good navigator who, when they were given a mission with one 500-pound bomb to bomb a hotel being used as an officer's club by Japanese brass, this guy stayed up all night studying maps of this area, and He was the navigator. He was also the bombardier. So when he was given control of the aircraft, he used his little controls to fly the aircraft far away from the hotel that they were supposed to bomb. And he dropped the 500-pound bomb on a large Japanese ammo dump. And the secondary explosion was massive. He didn't want to kill a bunch of the geishas that were going to be in the brass officers club.
Hey, Joe, how are you feeling?
Tired. Why do you ask?
Well, since you started transitioning, I'm just wondering.
Not transitioning.
Aren't you on HRT?
No, I'm on TRT.
Oh, okay. I didn't know yet if it started to affect you or not.
Oh, I've noticed some things.
Have you? Some bigger breasts?
Yeah. See?
And,
do you have an arm? Do you have any traps or a chest yet? Just arms?
Oh, no, my chest is bigger too, but...
Have you lactated?
Why don't you come by and find out?
You'll squirt me in the face.
Yeah, well...
No, are you feeling better, though? Can you tell a difference?
Yeah, there's like I don't know if I mentioned it before, but there's a lot less brain fog. I do feel stronger. I'm gonna up my calories and see if that helps with my energy levels, because I know I'm burning more. I have a slightly lower body fat percentage, which is odd considering I've only been on it for like 2 weeks. My muscles are fuller. I am stronger. But I just have less overall energy. So I'm going to up my calories for a little while to between 2,800 and 3,000 instead of the 22 to 2,300 that I was doing. And see what happens then. If I start gaining a lot of fat, then I will cut back again. And if I just, you know, maintain my weight or put on more muscle, lose more body fat, then I'll be fine.
Well, what about... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I'm sure that you'll straighten things out.
Yeah, evidently, I did some YouTube research, you know, with some bodybuilders that I generally watch, and 2,200 to 2,300, it might be excessively low for me. So,
well, if you're throwing around weight, if you're working out, that's when those, as somebody from a farm background, that's why those big spreads that everybody remembers from, you know, back along, were put up when people are throwing, you know, hay bales or cows or what have you around. You need to, you know, you need to fuel the engine.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna see what happens with the higher calories, and, you know, if at first I start putting on just a little bit of body fat, I'm not going to worry about it. But if, yeah, a few weeks go by and the numbers are still going up, then I'll have to reevaluate.
Well, sounds like you're putting on the muscle and wringing out what relatively little fat you got.
Well, I'm probably in like 20% range, and I should probably be in, it's supposedly more healthy to be at the 15% range. It's just, I'm not excessively worried about that extra 5%.
Yeah, I mean, some of the standards that they have for, I mean, there are people that are seriously over, but some of the standards they have seem to be a little nuts.
Yeah, I've mentioned before that BMI is a horrible measurement of health. So,
for populations, not for individuals.
For population, fine, but for individuals, it's horrible.
So what's your dosage, your weekly dosage, you know?
I'm not taking the shot. I'm getting the Androgel.
Mm-hmm.
So it's two pumps from the little dispenser daily. I'm not sure what that comes out to.
Hmm. And you said that your cholesterol was good going in?
Yes. Well, my HDL is low, but my LDL is also low, which is good.
Yeah. What did you about your triglycerides?
Everything else was good.
Yeah. But I read that it can raise your LDL if you're not careful.
Right. I need to start doing more cardio, which is part of the reason that I'm going to eat more so that I have more energy and actually want to go out and get on my bike.
I'm about to take my fish oil right now.
I actually need to order some more fish oil.
Actually, well, a few years ago, I could have sent you all the fish oil you wanted with the fish still attached.
Well, because I'm on the TRT, I'm stopping a lot of the other supplements that I'm taking, like the Fidogia agrestis, the ashwagandha. Actually, I might stay the ashwagandha just because it helps manage stress. But then there's a couple of others, like the fenugreek. I'll probably stop taking that.
So what all were you taking that was just test boosting?
Well, the stuff that was supposedly clinically proven to assist with testosterone, so that would be the fish oil,
yeah,
which I'll still take, vitamin D, which I will also still take.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was the fenugreek, the ashwagandha, the
what's
Fidogia
agrestis. Is that an herb or what?
It is. It's an Indian herb. It's actually, it's used for both men and women to help maintain hormone levels. And it's been used for like a really long time for that. And then there's one other one that I was taking that I stopped a while ago. What was it?
Ashwagandha? Is that for test?
Ashwagandha helps reduce cortisol, which in turn helps boost testosterone levels.
And then what else are you
stress.
Taking?
The Fidogia agrestis, which is one that has been studied recently in order to be able to some of the studies have shown that it can increase testosterone levels in people that are low in testosterone. And then another one was Tongkat Ali.
I've seen that, yeah.
Yeah, so I was taking Fidogia agrestis, Tongkat Ali, the fish oil, the ashwagandha, the vitamin D, and I had tried some others. I also take some magnesium and some zinc, and then, you know, a multi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We couldn't see the label on that. By the time it stopped jittering, yeah. I actually probably should start taking some calcium to help my vitamin D absorption.
But by the way, maybe I'll ask to see if they'll check my cortisol levels, because that is a stress hormone. I think. If that's the one that I'm thinking of. Is it?
Yeah, cortisol is a stress hormone.
Well, since they won't check the hormone that that I want them to check, maybe I'll be able to sneak up on others.
What won't they check for you?
T-stone. But then again, my cholesterol is probably not where it should be, so that's probably why.
Yeah. Well, low testosterone is fairly common in, well, my generation now, with a lot of men are ending up on testosterone replacement therapy. But it's also even more common with people with apnea. So that's one of the reasons I got it tested in the first place. It just took a couple of years before my doctor agreed with me that my low numbers were low enough for me to get replacement therapy. I don't know, Jackie, have you noticed any difference with me since I started taking it? Not really? I have noticed a bit more acne, but nothing extremely terrible. If I start growing man boobs, I'll let you know.
What they say for Androgel is it's each pump is just over 20 milligrams.
Okay, so I'm taking 40 milligrams a day.
Yeah, it says recommended starting dose is 40 and a half milligrams, which is two pumps.
And then I get tested in December to see where my levels are.
And probably your blood lipids, too, they want to check.
Yeah, and they'll check my cholesterol again and my blood pressure. But this stuff can raise your blood pressure, but since I was sitting at very borderline low blood pressure, I don't think that's going to be an issue.
My last blood pressure was 108 over 72. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that reminds me this weekend, I'll be able to finally get back on my pills because the insurance companies will have unlocked them.
I just ordered refills for my one of my nasal sprays, one of my allergy pills, and then the Androgel. Because, yeah, I think if you're doing two pumps, it only lasts about a month.
You know how much that Paxlovid is? They just raised the price on it. I saw it went up to $1,400 for a one-week dose.
Ouch.
That's double what it was before, which is already over $700.
We can't talk about that, though.
Well, once we start the show.
We'll get demonetized.
Yeah. We're still in the pre-show. Yeah, I just saw they raised the price, doubled it. I guess because they're doing that with all the vaccines now that... Now that you have
government
to pay for
subsidies,
them.
Yeah.
But we don't have that kind of bargaining power like the government does.
It's not considered a vaccine, is it?
No, Paxlovid's not. But they're doing that with the COVID vaccines, too. They're raising the prices. But a lot of people's insurance will pay for them. I mean, they'll just pay for the whole thing, you know.
Well, a lot of people's insurances are quite willing to...
they consider it worth it.
Preventative.
Yeah, right. Like my flu vaccine is free and stuff like that.
Right. They're kind of bundling them up now, too. Which makes sense.
Yep. Do you want to start the show? Or you want to say anything else controversial before we start?
We still haven't gone through our regular...
What
have we been watching?
Rigmarole.
Well, we've already been talking about steroids, so...
We've talked about YouTube. We've talked about history and gunships and YouTube and medical shit. And we haven't talked at all about, like, the regular rigmarole shit about, like, what we've been up to in movies and...
We've barely even touched on my testicles yet.
Have they shrunk?
No, not yet.
Are you sure? Have you gotten a little? You gotta get it out. All right. You gotta sit there. You gotta measure them. You make sure there isn't any problems.
The squeeze test tells me they're the same.
Sure. And squeeze test isn't reliable.
Well, how else digital can I make sure that my cancer didn't grow?
Digital well, caliber. Anyway, you got to get down there and make sure.
No, how am I? Else am I supposed to make sure that the cancers didn't grow? The little lumps that I have.
Digital caliber.
You can put up a caliper on your balls.
Yeah. Ask your wife.
You asked.
What I probably check them more often than she does. Let's be honest.
What is the blanket you have there?
Oh, which one is this? My sister makes them. She gets the materials, and then it's Star Wars. But...
Oh, okay. With the one face I could see, it wasn't obvious what it was.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to tell. No. Some black dude looking over my shoulder.
As far as what we've been watching...
Is Jackie going in? Is she going to go in for a checkup for exhaustion?
She's trying to find a general practitioner. I am trying to convince her that she needs to do it a little bit more quickly. But I'm trying to convince her.
Well, you know. Ain't none of my business, but I hope she takes care of herself. I mean, you know.
She don't get physicals?
I can only push so hard. The answer to that is no. She's had some bad experiences with the local doctors.
She should go to mine. I'll send you a text of my doctor. She's great.
Okay. A female? Yeah?
Yeah, female.
All right.
She's real cool and very, like, understanding. Definitely not judgmental or anything.
Good. As long as she's in network, then it works out.
Yeah, that's the most important part.
You got Aetna?
Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Oh, okay.
But she might be. This was Methodist.
Well, I have to be honest, I did not watch the movie.
You didn't watch the movie?
Really? Why not?
Just got busy, forgot, couldn't get around to it.
Mortensen, did you watch it?
You better have watched it.
You better have watched it.
I most certainly did.
Excellent. Okay.
Thank you for being a team player.
It wasn't just going to be me and Dave talking about it.
Oh, come on. I missed one movie.
I also watched Santa Slays and Slaughterhouse. Along with a couple other movies.
Santa Slays is an awesome movie.
Santa Slays is a fantastic movie. That was a great recommendation.
I told y'all, it was great. It was awesome.
The amount of stars that were just randomly thrown into that movie was just fantastic too. The whole beginning.
Oh man, that opening dinner scene with the nanny and all them. Yeah. That was great.
Yeah, 3 minutes in, and it could have gone completely downhill from there and been terrible, and I still would have given it a thumbs up.
Yep.
She was looking hot too, man. Fantastic. I didn't realize that was her until she opened her mouth. I heard her voice.
I always thought that was a fake voice, and then she just kept using it, I guess.
You never seen The Nanny?
I did. I thought the voice that she used in The Nanny was fake.
I got you. Apparently not.
Because there was one time in The Nanny where she like had some extra spicy foods and completely lost that nasally accent.
It was a big blob of wasabi she ate.
Yeah. And was actually speaking was normal.
I didn't watch it. I've just seen that clip.
Uh-huh. Yeah. All right, we're buying it.
Yeah,
but
so...
I did watch half of The Haunted Mansion. But I watched that with Jackie, and we're still trying to make time to watch the other half of it.
So you had already seen Santa Slays?
If it's the one I'm thinking of.
With Goldberg?
Then no, it's not the one I was thinking of. What was that other Santa movie that we watched a while back? Where it had John Leguizamo.
No.
And then it had the guy that played...
Spawn?
No. That's Michael Jai White. The guy from Stranger Things.
Silent Night?
Was it Silent Night?
If it's the one with Stranger Things, that's the newer one that just came out, wasn't it? Is that Silent Night?
I'm sorry, Violent Night.
Violent Night. Yes.
No, you should check out Santa Slays. It's a hidden gem.
It is indeed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I see that Mordency has it. I'll try to check it out when I get the chance.
It's on Tubi, too.
And Slother House is so stupid, it's funny.
And I'm watching that.
Watching that this weekend.
Oh my god, the first minute of that, and I was hooked. That was great.
You know what? I was able to kind of like suspend disbelief a little bit, and then the sloth climbed up onto the table and started moving the mouse around. I'm like, yep, okay.
It sounds like my kind of movie.
Of course, the whole like when he's attacking, when the sloth is attacking and he's gripping it, like it reminded me of like any time in any of the Muppet movies that anybody attack, like a Muppet attacks a human because they're fighting like that, you know, they're holding on.
They gotta hold it and shake it around.
Yeah, it was fun to watch.
Who wants to go first about what you've watched?
I'll get into some of the stuff. I started watching the first season of Sliders. I think I might have mentioned that I was going to last time, but I actually did start watching it. Got 4 or 5 episodes into that. The second season of Quantum Leap. I'm not all the way caught up with that, but I have started it. I want to watch Loki. I mean, there's so much good stuff that's come out right now. And then Doom Patrol. And I want to watch Doom Patrol. And then I've heard terrible things about Rick and Morty Season 7.
Oh, there's a new Doom Patrol out?
There's a new Doom Patrol out?
Yeah, there's 3 episodes out currently.
Oh, I didn't know that. And Rick and Morty's not any good?
I still haven't watched Season 3 of Doom Patrol, but I thought the first episode of Rick and Morty was great, and there hasn't been a second one yet.
Just the reviews so far are saying that it's not doing anything new and it's kind of stagnating a little bit.
Or is it without Justin Roiland?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe that's why they don't like it.
But from what I understand, the guy that's doing the voice is very similar.
Well, you know how fans can be.
Bitch is gonna bitch.
Yep.
But yeah, the final season of Doom Patrol, unless it gets picked up by someone else, it has started and it's 3 episodes in.
Oh, it's the final season?
Yeah. Actually, this is weird because it's showing up as episodes 7, 8, and 9 in here, and I thought those were already out, so maybe it hasn't. Hold on.
Has anybody seen Gen V?
Something is wrong with my Plex.
Anybody watching Gen V?
I've been watching Gen V.
What do you think about it?
Yeah. It's good. It's nice to be in the same universe as The Boys. I don't think it's as good as The Boys.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. But it did have a cameo from the main actor of tonight's movie, Soldier Boy. What's his name? Eccles? Jenkles? Jen Eccles?
Jason Eccles.
Yeah. Yeah. He was the protagonist in Devour that we watched for the show.
Okay, so I see. It is still season 4, but it's season 4 part 2, and it started October 12th, and 2 episodes came out on the 12th, and 1 came out on the 19th, and then, yeah, weekly after that. But only 1, 2, 3 more episodes.
Mm. About you, Morton, see what you've been watching. You always got something good.
Yeah,
Joe,
it's not
your
coming
fan
out.
It's coming through big time. Sorry, Morton.
I'm having trouble loading what I've watched. Same with Joe. New season of Quantum Leap. Lower Decks.
That's the new
Rick and Morty
animated Star Trek show, right?
Yeah, it is. It continues to be good, and I am happy that they haven't done a similar thing with that Hollywood hasn't picked up and run with that idea of just making a irrelevant show about unimportant characters, and referencing, they reference all the Star Treks.
You mean like Marvel does?
Like Marvel does?
Well, if I remember right, they mentioned DS9, so everybody's hopeful that more DS9 stuff will start.
Oh, nice. I like DS9. What else?
They just reference so much. I watched those movies. I watched a couple other horror movies. I'm trying to think what they were.
Devour?
Well, I mean, yeah, Devour, Santa Slays, and Slaughterhouse. I thought it was like doing some merge of Thoth and Slaughter. and then when it opened up with the Sloth, I was like, oh, I know where this is going. I watched a couple things on Netflix, but I can't remember what they were. Loki, Shorzy, American Horror Story is not doing it for me the last few seasons. I did watch the Barbie movie.
Oh, you did? What'd you think? I've never seen it.
I went to a Barbie-themed birthday party.
Is that out on streaming?
Yeah.
Indeed. And American Dad. I got caught up on Family Guy, and now I'm catching up on American Dad. I stopped watching it a couple years before the pandemic started. I mentioned it on the last show. I watched the new Equalizer 3 and Kill Her Goats. Kill Her Goats was terrible.
What is that about? Is that a horror movie?
It's a horror slasher movie, yeah. It's hard to watch. It's terrible. With little redeeming qualities to it. I think that's about it.
What about you, Honky? Hey, there's Eric.
Mostly just like Star Wars Rebels. I'm almost done with that.
Hey, guys.
Hey, what's going on, Eric?
How's it going, man?
Hanging in there.
Got you doubled up.
Oh, no.
There you go.
Sorry, I don't know why it did that.
I watched The Nun. I thought that was okay. It's kind of spooky. Oh, The Nun 2 is on.
It is.
Yeah. Santa Slay, of course. It's awesome. I'll watch Slaughterhouse this. Maybe tomorrow. Tomorrow or tonight, I'm not sure. I watched a show called Grandmother's House. It was a horror from the late 80s, but it's got one of the antagonists, the bad guys, is Uncle Leo from Seinfeld.
It's got Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen in it.
Does it? No, it doesn't. Or am I missing the joke? I'm sorry.
At Grandma's House?
Grandmother's House.
Grandmother's House. Hmm. It was actually, I think, like To Grandma's House We Go or something.
Oh, right. That's that movie that they did.
What are you watching this for, Joe? Oh, you got kids.
Exactly.
Of course.
I have daughters.
That's what he's laying them out. All right.
I watched, all right,
bud. We're buying it.
That was the reason I got to watch so much Phineas and Ferb, and Phineas and Ferb is awesome.
That is good, yeah.
Yeah, I have to second that. Phineas and Ferb is awesome.
I watched Dr. Giggles. It was a slasher movie about this doctor that goes around and kills people in weird doctor ways. Like, one lady, he pumps her stomach, and all her guts come out of her mouth and stuff like that. It's okay. Nice. Actually, it wasn't that great. But I did watch a movie that I hadn't seen since I saw it at the theater in 95, and that's Tales from the Hood. That's on Tubi, and that's great. I love that movie. And then, of course, Devour. Watch that. And then I think tomorrow we're supposed to see Butcher's Crossing, that new Nick Cage movie where he plays that madman that's shoots the buffalo and stuff. It's supposed to be pretty good. But that's about it for me.
Hanging out with you guys has shown me that I do not watch nearly as many movies. I mean, not even like a tenth it's funny, I get on here and it's like, what did you guys watch? And you, all of you list off like a dozen things. And I'm like, I think I watched like one thing a week ago. Like, I don't know. It's just an observation. It doesn't mean anything. I'm just, it's funny to me. Like, I guess you guys probably potato chip a lot and like you got a movie on and you're doing something else or.
I usually have movies on at work or when I'm, okay. when I'm doing projects at home, I'll have a movie on.
That's what I figured.
If I watch something, that usually means that I spent at least a couple of days working from home, and or I decided to do some soldering of some kind or some 3D design of some kind, and it's playing on the other screen.
Yeah. Yeah, I tend to watch the same movies over and over as well. TV, too. I'm terrible. I've always been that way since I had... I blame it on having, like, the long play VCR tapes where you could, if you really wanted to, you could shove five movies on them and they were awful quality, but you know, you could do it. And so I had the same little shoebox of tapes that I watched the same, I don't know, 30 movies like over and over and over. And so I still do that today. Like I just have my favorites and I tend to go back and watch.
My dad had an entire collection of, you know, stuff that he had recorded and yeah, he only had the quality down to where, you know, he could fit three movies on each video, but he had like an entire library of them and he had them numbered. And then, you know, he had a guide with the numbers and the name of all three movies that were on there. And I used to have it memorized. I had gone through it so much. But, yeah, that was like back in the day living out in the middle of nowhere. And there was no cable. Yep. And,
I had we had, you know, a PBS station, two UHF stations. And I think two or three broadcasts, like network TVs. That was...
Yeah. I mostly watch... If I were watching broadcast TV, it was usually PBS, and that was usually from midnight to 2 a.m. when you had all your British shows on, so like Red Dwarf and Doctor Who. And there was this other one where they were in like an office building or something. It was like The Office before The Office, but I can't remember the name of that one.
The IT Professional, or what was it called?
Dude, no, this was IT in crowd. This IT was crowd. In the 90s, okay?
Oh,
it was a British show.
Well, they did have a British office.
Yeah.
Maybe that was it, but I don't know if that goes back to the 90s.
No, that was 2000s.
Yeah.
I remember I used to have the... I used to make my own videos by setting up, you know, I had a daisy chain, the VCRs. So you have one VCR, play on one VCR and record on the next VCR and then have it just keep going and you watch where it's at and you just kind of cut it off. Like I said, like you were saying, you can put several movies onto one VHS, usually just making tapes for your friends or something.
Well, I remember when my dad was in the Army and we were living in Germany, Laserdiscs were kind of big, and it was during the Laserdiscs versus DVD time frame. And our friend had a Laserdisc player, and then they would rent Laserdisc movies and have us record them, and so we would get to watch the Laserdisc videos and make copies of them. That's how we got bangers like Teen Wolf 2.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've ever actually saw a laser disc. I knew what they were, but I knew that they were about the size of like a record.
Yeah.
I saw the discs, but I never actually got to see one play.
So. I watched Twister on Laserdisc. That was the first time I experienced it.
They were still making laser discs till late then. I mean,
they did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were some people that were holdouts on that because it did have some advantages in terms of quality. You could only fit and like I think it was like less than a full movie's worth on one disc. Like you had to switch out discs and stuff. I'm pretty sure that's true.
For your longer movies. I heard it was an audio quality thing, or I think I remember reading that it was an audio quality thing, and that's why people like the laser discs. But now you got Blu-ray, so
Wait, remember when Blu-ray beat out, what was it, HD?
HD DVD, yep.
Yeah, HD DVD, yeah. Like one of, I got, I don't remember how, but I got a HD DVD player for my Xbox, and I got a couple of HD DVD. Actually, you know, one I probably still, yeah, I got the, I got about five of them over there. It was the Ocean's Collection, King Kong, and some other movies.
Yep, there's only going to be one format, usually, just like Betamax and VHS.
Well, there's that one point where they're both out, and then they both got a, then, you know, one kind of beats out the other one.
Mm-hmm.
What format was it that the PSPs had?
Oh, the
Yeah,
these little CDs inside of a case.
Oh, yeah.
I suppose I could open the drawer over here and take a look and see what it says on the case.
Like a mini disc almost.
Yeah, hold on.
I just saw they had a...
UMD. It was UMD.
Yeah. They have a remaster of Final Fantasy III for the PSP. I didn't know that until recently. I'm going to have to play that. Is that Gone in 60 Seconds?
Yeah, the UMD version of Gone in 60 Seconds.
Yeah, I just looked it up. So LaserDiscs, there were a couple different standards, but the one standard was 60 minutes per side. So you'd have to slip...
most movies so you'd have to...
Flip it over. So that it had two sides, so you'd literally have to just take it out and flip it over.
Mm-hmm.
But you had to do that like literally every time, so obviously yeah, that was
like a record.
Hassle.
Right.
Yeah. Forced intermission.
Yeah.
Well, it's 9:30. You want to start the show?
Sure. You guys didn't start yet?
No.
We're all talking about tech.
We're waiting on you, Eric.
I thought I was like butting in.
Oh, we haven't even started.
This is a free for all. You're never butting in,
right?
Okay, good. Hey, 2 weeks ago I jumped in and then I quit because I was having the craziest audio problems and I could not get it to figured out, and I was just so frustrated by like, yeah, I just it was not my night. So that's why I quit.
To be? Do you know?
No, you know what? I did the typical reboot the next day, and like rebooting that night didn't work, but rebooting the next day did for some reason. So no, I really don't know what it was. So anyway.
I also watched Viking Wolf.
Viking Wolf. I hadn't heard of that one.
It's it's Norway's first werewolf movie.
Oh.
Ah.
Their first, huh?
Yeah, the thing I read about it, they said that they were surprised it was the first werewolf movie from Norway because of the history of Vikings and wolves and the belief in werewolves over the centuries.
Oh, speaking of werewolf and movies, which this isn't a werewolf movie, but I saw a vampire movie called Metamorphosis with Christopher Lambert on, what do you call it?
When was that from?
That's 2007, actually, so fairly recently.
Oh, okay.
I heard the stuff I usually watch, but I have to give it a thumbs down, because it wasn't good.
I usually like him.
Well, I like him. I thought he was good in this, but the movie itself, not very good, buddy.
Okay, so what do you guys think is the best werewolf movie of all time?
Oh, American Werewolf in London.
Yeah,
That is good. That is good. But I have to give it to Dog Soldiers.
Dog Soldiers.
I saw
good
Dog
too.
Soldiers.
Yeah, that's the Irish one, right?
Irish
or Scottish or some shit? Yeah, I think it's Irish actually.
I like Silver Bullet.
It is in Scotland.
Silver Bullet is very good.
Maybe it's Scottish.
Silver Bullet is good.
It's got to be American Werewolf in London.
The Howling wasn't bad.
At least an American Werewolf in London is better than an American Werewolf in Paris.
Yeah, I wasn't even going to bring that up.
It's been a long time since I've seen that one, American Werewolf in London.
It's not worth seeing.
In London, he said.
Yeah, I don't think I'm ever bothered to see the one in Paris.
If you enjoy cheese, then definitely watch that one.
It will tarnish your memory of London.
I'm looking through a list of werewolf movies, and there's one called Wolf Cop.
I've seen that.
That sounds about right.
That's pretty good.
Is it on Tubi right now?
Probably.
Not bad.
It's on my plaque. So is another Wolf Cop. I haven't watched it. I may have watched it when they came out, but I have both of them. There's two of them.
It's 2014, awesome. At least this version on here. So.
Not bad.
Nobody I've ever heard of in the cast.
The drunk cop.
Okay, the 15 best werewolf movies of all time. And the number one is obviously An American Werewolf in London.
Of course.
Is this Ginger Snaps? I've never heard of Ginger Snaps.
Oh, that was good.
Ginger Snaps is good, but they made too many sequels.
I haven't seen the sequels, but the original is pretty damn good.
The Howling, Wolfen, Trick or Treat. I haven't seen Trick or Treat.
Oh, Wolfen is with Jack Nicholson, right?
Yeah.
Oh, is that
the one? Mentioned Dog Soldiers.
Michelle Pfeiffer.
Oh, no. Wolfen is Albert Finney, Diane Venora, Gregory Hines, Edward James Olmos.
Maybe it's just called Wolf.
I think it was just called Wolf, yeah.
Teen Wolf. Mm-hmm. Wolf.
Yeah, Wolf.
Wow. Yeah. Wolf had Jack Nicholson.
Michelle Pfeiffer, right?
I'm going to have to watch some of these. I haven't heard about half of these.
Late Phases? I don't know that one.
Well, it says Late Phases on the cover, but it's actually called Night of the Wolf.
Oh, okay.
I don't know that one.
I still don't know that one. Werewolves Within, I don't know that one either.
I still like The Wolfman. I watched that pretty much.
Werewolves Within is hysterical. It is great. I recommend everybody watch it.
The Wolf of Snow Hollow?
I haven't seen that.
What was it called? Werewolf Within?
Werewolves Within. From 2021.
From 2021?
Interesting.
Yes. And then The Company of Wolves from 1984.
I haven't seen that one either.
I haven't either. Ginger Snaps is on the list. Mm-hmm. Dog Soldiers is on the list, but it's way down on the list. It's so wrong. And then Silver Bullet.
Yeah.
That's a great one.
The Curse of the Werewolf from 1961. I should watch Silver Bullet again. I really enjoyed that.
Silver Bullet is so good. When I was a kid, that was absolutely one of my favorites.
I had picked
up wheelchair and stuff.
Yeah, but what's his name? The guy who wrote it.
Stephen King.
That's it. Thank you. I don't know why I blanked on Stephen King's name. I went through like a big Stephen King kick a couple months ago.
Movie or book? Watch
that.
Movies. It's
got movies, shows.
I mean, it's got Gary Busey in it. How can you argue with
right?
that?
Right. And it's a drunk Gary Busey.
Right.
You mean an awake Gary Busey?
That's it.
Something like that.
So yeah, The Curse of the Werewolf is the universal monster, and then before that, you had the Wolfman from 1941, which
from
is
Lon
like the original.
Jr. Yeah, that's
the
a good
original.
One.
Yeah, with Anthony Hopkins.
What? No.
The story, which would be remade some 70 years later with Benicio del Toro and Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, okay, yeah. But not the original. That's Lon Chaney Jr.
Lon Chaney Jr., returning to his family home in Wales following the death of his brother and falling prey to an ancient curse of werewolfdom. Lon Chaney Jr. would reprise the role in multiple sequels.
Yeah, this is going to be the last show before Halloween, right?
Oh, yeah. Our next show will be the beginning of November 3rd.
Mm-hmm. Look at this shirt that Mordensey has on. He's so proud of it.
The first last time I will wear it.
To all the listeners that don't watch the stream, you should be watching it right now.
True. Or even better, you can come say hi.
Yeah, exactly.
You know the
Oh crap.
The couple that I did their wedding for them and they came to the Linux Fest.
It's
her little sister's party.
Oh, it's a Barbie theme party?
Barbie theme party, yeah. The one 2 years ago was the one where some other people were upset at me and haven't spoken to me since.
Oh boy.
It was Ariel themed.
Like the Little Mermaid?
Like the Little Mermaid?
Yeah, Little Mermaid. There was somebody that was visiting from Ecuador a teenager. She's in college in Germany now. But she was staying with the lady that babysits Alex, the little girl, and they all joined me for sushi. And Alex is always asking to go get sushi. She loves sushi. So that's one of my birthday presents. I told her when her sister and anybody else, when they want to go have sushi, to let me know that I'll treat her to sushi for her birthday.
Nice. Sushi has been my daughter's favorite food since she was about 6 years old.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's wild. She, I didn't have sushi until I was in my 20s. So
yeah, I don't think I did either.
But yeah. We just started making our own. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was in my late 20s and liked it so much. I bought a stack of books on sushi and learned about it and begged for over a year until they let me work in the restaurant. And I made sushi underneath one of the best sushi chefs on the planet. He used to cook for the Emperor of Japan.
Damn. Wow. Okay. Well, I suck at it, so.
Oh, I suck at it too. I'm. No.
It's edible.
To make a good roll, you really have to make like 1,000 of them, and then they start looking right.
I can imagine that's true. Yeah, and not just 1,000, but doing them back to back to back. You know, I make 5, and then you know that's it. That's for all 3 of us. So, if I were to make 50, I'm sure by like 20, I'd probably get something going. But
yeah, I was probably making 200-300 California rolls every night when I started.
Oh, wow.
During the week. Okay. Yeah, and I was like, this is too much. And they're like, keep making them. like a California roll, California roll came with like every one of the meals, sushi or just the regular Japanese meals. Came with a half or a whole California roll.
I'm pretty sure that would probably be the most popular roll on the menu. My daughter's not a big eater, but it's kind of frightening to put a plate of sushi in front of her and you turn your head and look back and you're like, oh my God, where did it go? And she's just, it's funny because I mean, we took her with us thinking she wasn't going to eat anything. And I think she was about 6 years old. And we got her California roll, and yeah, she just ate it, ate it, ate. And ever since, every special event, every holiday, every birthday, you know, can we get sushi?
Can we get sushi?
But now we can make it.
Do you use the soy paper or the seaweed?
Seaweed, yeah.
The soy paper is great. Is it? Yeah, so the seaweed isn't actually seaweed. It's a blue-green algae, toasted blue-green algae. But you have to keep that dry. You can't expose it to moisture. The soy paper is great. It usually comes in like neon colors, like green, yellow, pink.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a much more neutral flavor to it. And doesn't get soggy. It doesn't pull the moisture out of the rice and get soggy and chewy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the vegetable
awesome.
Roll.
I'll have to try that out.
With a bunch of vegetables, adding cream cheese to it is just great. Cream cheese and good tuna is also amazing. Everybody's surprised when I order it because they think it's going to be similar to the Philadelphia roll with the smoked salmon and cream cheese. You kind of know how that's going to taste in your head.
Right. Right.
Right.
And the tuna and cream cheese, you can imagine how it's going to taste, and it tastes completely different. And is amazing.
Sounds good to me.
Sounds good to me.
Assuming you like tuna and cream cheese.
My favorite is just salmon. Not smoked, not just salmon. I love the mouthfeel of it and out of everything I've tried, that and salmon eggs. I love the big roe. Whatever that roll is.
Salmon roe, Akira.
Yes, exactly.
Yes,
exactly. I couldn't remember.
I don't like it, and I used to love salmon and tuna equally, and white tuna. I love white tuna.
Uh-huh.
But I was at a non-sushi restaurant and had salmon pate, and it was bad, and got violently ill, and have. I will have salmon, but I just it like has that just there's like that memory, and I'm eating it, and I'm just like, I can't do much of it.
Gotcha.
But I keep trying.
I had told several people that I would let them know whenever I was joining. Like, I told them weeks ago that I would, and I forgot until 5 seconds ago, so I'm trying to see if anybody's around. Oh, my goodness. Well, since you mentioned sushi now, it's going to be stuck in my mind.
You ready, Honky?
Yeah, hold on.
Oh, my God.
It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
The Linux Link Tech Show. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast, live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Find us on the web at www.twlts.org. Or email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC server, thelinuxlink.net /techshow. Join Pat, Alan, Link, and Joel. And don't forget the two Dans. They are so hot. I know, because I've kissed them both. And Lionridge, he's a bloody drunk.
If you don't like the gas, you can get up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll link it back.